Super Gaming Best Friends. Super Gaming Best Friends. Monkey throwing barrels. Hunting ducks with dogs of scenarios, and we'll play with you.
It's Wednesday, August 29th, 2012, and that means it's time for Super Gaming Best Friends.
I'm on the wrong show.
You're supposed to cheer.
Oh.
Not.
Huzzah!
Yeah, there we go. HorribleNight.com's number one podcast about movie trivia. I'm your host, Josh Lee. I brought with me tonight one Justin Lacey, editor-in-chief of HorribleNight.com.
Thank you for having me, Josh Lee.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Or it's my show.
Ish.
Wait.
What?
I don't remember. Who invited who?
Yeah.
It's working well.
I host. My name is on the box. Shut up. You'll notice Ethan Moses is not with us tonight, unfortunately.
On a plane over the pond now.
Yes, he's on a jet plane. He does know where he's landing. That's in Germany. If you listen to our sister show, Horrible Show, he's going to be out for a couple of weeks probably, and then he'll be joining us via internet, we hope.
If they have that.
If they have internet in Germany, and if his wife lets him stay up till 4 a.m. to podcast every Tuesday night.
Placing bets now on which one actually becomes the reason that he can't.
It'll end up just being red alert. inside joke.
Kane.
And that's the voice of one Mr. Coleman Monroe. What's up? What's up, Cole?
Is this show Josh Lee Presents Super Gaming Best Friends?
It is.
Is that why your name is on the box?
Yes, it is.
I would never put his name in front of the show's name.
Also, I'm kind of concerned about the lack of Ethan for you two in particular. I feel like this is going to be a heated
safety
argument.
Safety is a concern.
There is
100%. I'm glad there is some space in between you guys. That's for sure.
Well, yeah. Since you're just on a little computer screen, but you can see us, you just have to watch it take place. You can call 911 and describe what you're seeing, but they won't get here in time.
I do have easy access to the door. Well, the problem is the way that he's threatened to kill me is in my sleep, so don't be bored.
So just sit, never go to sleep, Justin, just like Nightmare.
Yeah, keep me entertained and we should be okay.
I'm not trying to like best you in like honorable combat. Why wouldn't I
just trying to
kill you in your sleep? I mean, like that's I want
why
you to be.
Why wouldn't I?
Yeah, like I want you to be like in the middle of like either sleep or pooping or intercourse. Those are the times when you're most vulnerable, and you guys know what I'm talking about. You feel like, what if are the doors locked? I don't know. When you're in the middle of all those things.
That's what you're thinking.
Yeah,
about
that's what I don't know. That's what I think about. I just assumed you guys too.
It does for me.
and that's Mr. Brandon Cobberdole. How's it going, Brandon?
I'm good, but you know what? I'm going to check my doors real quick.
And podcasting.
Yeah, make sure the
podcasting is another vulnerable moment.
Just keep you want to keep a ranged weapon and a large blade next to the toilet.
Not a blunt object.
No.
Go for the blade.
No. But, if you have like a machete and you don't need to get up from the toilet, you're just going to chop at their legs with it.
Oh, okay.
And they'll fall, and then you can just hack at them.
You have thought about this.
They're just sitting. It's like bathrooms are small. They're going to land in front of you, and you don't have to actually get up.
I keep a nice aluminum baseball bat near my bathroom.
It might be too long.
I have a javelin sticking out of the back of the toilet. That's my range.
Like you think the toilet tank is like your sheath.
Some dude just got killed by a javelin in a contest.
In what? Germany.
Yeah.
Ethan better watch out for like flying javelins.
Oh, holy shit. Like where'd it hit him? Like the chest?
Neck.
The face? Oh.
Yeah, he died.
Yeah.
What? That's not the first time that's happened either. I've heard of that before.
I would think in the history of track and field, probably not.
You see the x-ray with the guy with the javelin in his head who lived?
No.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's crazy. Search on the internet, I believe.
Something to brag about.
I want to see a shot put kill. Or discus.
The Dark Olympics.
I don't know. The shot put kill.
Or the hammer.
Terrible.
Hammer.
The hammer would be cool. That'd just be especially that'd be like that scene in Braveheart, though.
Chain. Yeah, that's a morning star being flung around.
Yeah.
Picture some creative pole vault deaths.
We've seen that. We play in Pole Riders.
That's what you guys should play tonight. Pole Riders.
We can make that happen.
Yep. All right, so let's get on with the show, guys. As always, we'd like to start off with our on-the-spot question of the week. Send yours in to ask@horriblenight.com. Justin, you have this week's question?
Yes, this week's question comes in from Rick Dukeman. With the announcement of the new Hearthfire add-on, what will they add to Skyrim next?
Isn't that Hearth?
Hearthfire. What did I say, Hearth?
Yeah.
It's Hearthfire. Hearth. Yes.
You know, like you know what a Hearthfire is, right?
I do now.
Okay, right? Because of this.
It makes a lot more sense. Thank you. But yeah, what, they basically added homes and the ability
to... You can adopt children?
They explicitly said it's adopting, so there's no... I don't think there's any conceiving or abducting, is what they're...
There's no vulnerable intercourse happening?
No. No, that'd be weird because there's the cat people and dragon people and stuff, and you'd be just...
You don't promote that?
No. No, that would make an abomination. Are you kidding?
Like, well, one thing you're against, I'm really surprised about.
The Khajiit.
Yeah,
what? I'm okay with most of them, but no orcs. You can't meet with an orc.
There are people right now that
talk to Ethan
orcs.
About that.
You, there are people right now that look like orcs, and there are people that kind of like somebody with like really bad like eczema or something. They kind of look like lizards already. So, but it's the cat people that I'm worried about, and not like their first kid. It's like two generations down, where you're like a quarter cat, and you go on a date with some chick, and everything's going fine, and then you get back to the apartment, and you find out that she's got a tail. I saw this happen on 60 Minutes, it was a Dateline, and there was a guy who was with a chick with a tail, and he didn't know it for like months. I just don't want to be
that guy.
Yeah.
What do you got against tails?
They're not made for people. You shouldn't have it. You shouldn't have them.
He sucks and is very annoying.
So I mean, I think that the fact that they were focusing on the adopted children so much in this add-on that the conceived children must be the follow-up, right?
That would be a cool mod. Somebody's probably done that already, right?
Probably.
Have you guys used a lot of Skyrim mods?
No. We're console. Two console players here.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind. I used a mod that gave the guys hairier chests. One that added some spells.
Did you get the clean skin mod for all the ladies?
No. I've made them dirtier.
Okay.
He likes dirty ladies?
Yeah, I like them dirty. But they were all in panties.
He likes his men hairy and his panty women mod. Dirty panties.
You can kind of do anything in that game, but this is an official add-on, though. Like,
That's why it's so weird. It seems like it would be just like a little mod, but...
Well, how detailed is the house building stuff?
I guess you
because
can,
that may be
it looked pretty detailed like, from the trailer.
Like, how do you build the stuff?
You choose your plot of land and you build your house and you add on to the house and it.
You know, like how do you are you building like walls?
You build it in Minecraft and import it in.
Okay, that's it. Use MC Edit, copy paste.
And I was reading features. Didn't watch the trailer.
So okay, wow, we're really unprepared. Anyways, that wasn't the question though. Obviously, Rick knows what this DLC does.
Well, Brandon watched the trailer. What did it show? Anything about how they were building this stuff? Did it look like an editor or?
Oh no, not really. I mean, it looked like kind of you get a book or whatever that kind of tells you what you can add on or how you can add on, and you kind of select them, and then it just kind of adds it on.
So oh, okay.
It's not like you sit there at a crafting table and actually building the house. It's more of pick it like when you bought
Fortnite. Fortnite.
Right.
That's what I want. I want to. I just.
But you know what? I found it funny that this was like an add-on because, you know, for console players, it really doesn't add a whole lot to the game. I mean,
so I started thinking. About,
I don't know. Dawnguard added like entire new missions, and plot lines.
Well, this is going to not
just
be. This
build
will
a
be,
house and adopt a kid.
How much does this cost? Though?
$5.
How much was Dawnguard? Like 20, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it's a little different. I mean, $5 is better than you know the horse armor complete pack or whatever from Oblivion.
I'm
I mean,
still
it could be worse.
But then again, I started thinking about like who was this for, and then I started thinking about who's still playing Skyrim obsessively to the point that this is something that they want, and that's
right.
That's a totally different person than what I want out of Skyrim. So,
well, there are people that will claim a house, you know, mm-hmm. and they'll just put all their shit in it, all and they'll cheese. Live in it. Yeah, all their cheese wheels and their wife or wives. All their like, you know, people spend a lot of time living in the world, like, you know, like you're saying. So, I think maybe the next step is maybe let you run your own shop. Like, I'm a blacksmith in that game.
Probably, yeah.
Let me sell my shit out of an actual blacksmith shop.
More property ownership type stuff. Going into Fable territory.
Well, no, I want to, like, Wrecketeer. Like, I want to, like, just be able to play the whole game out of my one little house and
smoothie. If that engine could support destructible environments, holy shit.
Whoa. No, not that Wrecketeer.
Destroyed all your house and your
the
house.
The shop. God damn it. The Steam game.
Not the recent one that most people know about.
Right. No, yeah, not the Kinect game, the one on Steam that everybody that plays PC games knows about.
I don't think they're going to do a Wrecketeer Kinect add-on for this game.
No. But, you know, just...
Well, what else can they add? Something. What else can they add?
I want to ride a dragon.
There you go.
Well, yeah, did you guys see the video from the little game jam thing all the developers did? The little montage. There's like 100 different sweet moments. Yeah, there's like all these cool things, like the Ride a Dragon thing. There was a... the Mount of Combat stuff's in there now.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of other shit in there. Yeah, Giant Crab. There was different magic stuff. I don't know. I can't remember all these different things now, but I just... You know what? All those. I want all that shit in the game, basically.
Would that make you play it?
Again? Yeah. You know what? I've been thinking about it.
I have too.
Quite a bit, but I've been, because I haven't tried Dawnguard yet.
I like literally the itch started to happen at just the wrong time because the games are getting ready to come out again. So
I just like to sometimes I want to explore.
Yep,
and that game lets me do that, and it's fun.
That's the big draw.
Yeah. Anyways, anybody have anything else to add there?
It's Cole's favorite game.
I haven't heard Cole say anything. Cole doesn't give a shit about Skyrim.
Sure don't.
Brumag don't play that.
Fuck off.
thanks Rick for sending that question in. You can send your own questions in to ask@horriblenight.com and we'll read them on this show or the Horrible Show. Guys, I have a question. What are you playing? Justin Lacey.
At this minute.
Right now.
I've played a lot of stuff the last couple weeks, actually. Lots of good game time. The majority of which has been spent on Darksiders 2. So I am...
You're deep.
I'm like 20 hours in.
That sounds deep.
I want to say two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through, depending on me not knowing where the ending is and my math skills.
How long was the first game?
Like probably 20. I think this is a little bit bigger. The world is much bigger.
Can you tell by Chivos?
Yeah, Chivos aren't... They're not heavy in this game. I mean, there are a lot of them, but it's a lot of like accrued type of stuff. So I'm not getting those left and right. It's just kind of all the story based ones. So, and I haven't been really mixing up my play style. I've been kind of sticking to... I've got two main abilities that I like that Death uses, the kind of Reaper ability to just do this one big sweeping scythe critical hit monster move, and then I summon little zombie guys. Those are the two moves I've been powering up. So there's a skill tree.
Okay.
There's two branches that you can level up and up to, I think, like 20 skill points. So so that side's a little bit new, and then obviously all the loot in this game is kind of the other big feature that they added from Darksiders 1. I guess they're going to try to put it in Darksiders 1, but ran out of time. But I like it. My favorite part about the loot system is that you can pick up possessed weapons, which basically are weapons that you feed other weapons to level them up. So each possessed weapon can get leveled up 5 times, and so you'll feed it another weapon with some abilities, and it'll take one of those abilities when you level it up. Like, you get to choose, oh, you fed it this frost scythe. Would you like the frost ability, or would you like its critical hit bonus? And so you kind of customize your weapons, and you have a main weapon, your scythes, and then a sub-weapon, which can...
It's scythe.
I'm saying scythe. I'm sticking with it.
I don't think you should.
In honor of Ethan.
I don't think you should do that.
Fine, you're scythe. I'm from Southern Indiana. I don't care.
We got scythes there.
I wash my scythes all the time.
I'm from Illinois.
So, hey, quick question on the weapon devouring.
Yeah.
Are you picking up weapons that are still like more powerful than the one you have? And is that one eating your previous weapon, or are you using your previous weapon to kind of consume the new weapon?
I haven't noticed. I've only picked up one or two weapons that I couldn't immediately equip. So I'm not getting a lot of weapons that are over my level. But when I did notice when you go back to levels that when you go back to areas that have lower level enemies, they drop weapons relative to their level. So I haven't really been trying to get into higher level stuff. That being said, I'm usually in an area where I'm getting weapons around whatever level I am, and the weapons are the same level. So I'm eating the weapons are eating weapons of their same level or just right around there.
And, okay.
But there are, you know, they're your common weapons, your rare weapons, your elite weapons. They've got, you know, the different colors there.
So you have to sometimes decide, like, do I want to keep this thing?
Sometimes you'll get like a rare or an epic weapon, and it is better than it'll start out better than the possessed weapon. But if you level up that possessed weapon and you feed it probably two or three rare weapons per level.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you've leveled up a couple times, it's pretty damn powerful. So I'm always walking around with one possessed weapon and usually one standard weapon, because outside of the size, you've got hammers and axes and another weapon that you can kind of mix up your combos with. So,
well, you were talking the other day about how much fun you're having with the traversal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So how Prince of Persia-y is that?
It's not as heavily focused. There's not a lot of skill to it. It's more of puzzle solving. There's a little bit more skill in Prince of Persia, but because I came off of playing Prince of Persia and how smooth that was, the rough edges around Darksiders tend to show. And that's kind of like, it's getting thrown into this that we just don't have very many B-tier titles anymore. And this would be, you know, the best that the B-tier titles can hope to be, but they're like everything that it does really well, it can always do a little bit better. That's like everything that it borrows from. It's not quite as good as the original, but sum up all the pieces and it makes it a great game. So it's doing a lot of different stuff and it's very ambitious. I love the world. The story caught me off guard as far as, it's very loosely tied to the first game. It basically just kind of touches on in the beginning and then Death kind of goes on his own adventure to hopefully tie it back in by the end. But, I've said it before, and I think it's just the character of Death and how they've kind of portrayed him. He's one of my favorite video game characters already, just because he's just it's a lot of fun to be Death, and he has an awesome voice actor behind it, and Michael Wincott.
Michael Wincott. So, I just saw a movie trailer for something he's going to be in, and he's like a CIA agent or something, and he looks like he's right out of like the 50s, but he's he's like bald and he's got glasses and this like a big gray mustache.
That's kind of weird.
Does
he look like Death?
Looks more like Gary Oldman or something. Yeah, he does look like, he just looks terrible.
The voice acting's really good, and that was one of the surprising bonuses of the first Darksiders was the quality of the voice acting, the quality of the music, just all the other pieces. I thought it would just be, this is a game with a nice graphical style and that everything else kind of falls off there. But, every aspect of the production is done really well. I recognize one of the other voice actors from Game of Thrones. And then, cause a lot of it, like you're just kind of hanging out with, when you're in the Forge lands, you're hanging out with like kind of.
Like, who are these characters?
They're called Makers, but they're very like, I'd say like just Irish, Scottish influenced. And you're trying to work with them to get to the world tree. The Tree of Life, to resurrect humanity so that war is absolved of eradicating humanity.
Oh.
So you're playing Secret of Mana.
Hmm.
No, it's not Secret of Mana, if that's what you're thinking.
No. So what are the, like, where are you in this game?
You're actually in different realms. So there's, that was the kind of surprising part. Like, there's Earth Realm where we all were or are, and you're in the Forge Lands. It's a different realm, and then you travel to other realms because the Tree of Life is connecting all of this stuff. And so you kind of use that as a portal. And so the scope, who knows where this is going to end in the Darksiders universe. Because one of the things I liked about Darksiders 1 was that it was all on Earth. It starts off at the apocalypse, and then you play like hundreds of years after the apocalypse. So, but it was still like there were remnants of our cities, and then other things would happen. But there's a lot of like kind of magical things in that first game, and it starts to tie, like a lot of it's coming from these other realms. And so there are characters that tie them all together. And it's just deeper, a deeper universe than I expected. And really curious to see how this game wraps up. So I should be wrapping that up in the next week or so. And then
I know you said like you kind of get a hint of what the first game is in the second, but do you know like kind of time frame? Is it running concurrently? Is it before
the first game? From what I understand, if I was interpreting it right, like I said, the game Darksiders 1 starts off at the apocalypse, and then war basically gets taken under by the Charred Council, and they are grilling him about what his punishment's going to be for unleashing the apocalypse. And he's like, it wasn't me. And I'm pretty sure because he's down there for a couple hundred years. I'm pretty sure that death is doing his thing while he's still underground. I don't think Darksiders 1, the bulk of it has happened yet. So
that's cool.
So it's kind of concurrently it's after the apocalypse, but
it's kind of prequel, really.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I don't know if like
don't run into each other.
No,
that's weird.
But it works. I think it just they didn't limit the game, because I was actually kind of worried about like, am I going to revisit the same areas, the same types of guys?
Yeah, but they don't ever see him like hug because they're brothers.
There's still the ending
brothers
to go.
Got a hug.
There's still the ending to go, and there's still two other horsemen out there, which are not Pestilence and Famine, by the
way. They're not.
They are, what is it, Strife and Fury. And Fury.
Can't do that?
Yeah. And one of them's a lady. I believe Fury.
What?
Yep. So, the lady horsemen. So, we'll see. They haven't outright said they're making even a Darksiders 3, but I'm sure they would like to if this sells well. Mm-hmm. So I'll be curious to see how this game sold at all. So
if it we'll keeps see. THQ afloat.
Yeah, THQ, man, I don't have a lot of faith.
It's awesome though. We'll I see. Love it. I love it. Like, it's one of those games, I know it's not like classically great, but it's the perfect game for me. I love
it. It's fun.
It's got the exploration that I love, the type of character and worlds that I like, and it's fun to play and lots of good battle system. So I will be reporting back on that again pretty soon. Cool. So a little side tangent here. I was thinking back. This actually happened when I was playing Darksiders 1. But I've said before that the art style is very similar to World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah. I know where this is going.
And the character of death and just how the world is portrayed a little bit reminded me of the Undead campaign in World of Warcraft, especially the opening areas of the Undead, which were like some of my favorite World of Warcraft memories was playing the beta, and my friends and I ran around as Undead characters. So every time I'm playing these games, I start thinking about making World of Warcraft characters, and I opened up a trial account this past weekend just to run around.
What are you doing?
Yeah, I didn't get very far because this past weekend was the early release weekend for Guild Wars 2.
Did you not know that when you jumped into that?
No, I was like, it was literally an impulse thing on Friday.
Sometimes you got to get those impulses out of your system, though.
Yeah, and it was
intervention.
Hasn't got to that point yet.
Like, I do that sometimes. Like, I'll really want to, I'll just have a hankering.
Yeah.
And then I'll throw something in, and I play it for half hour, and then I'm like, okay, that's all I needed, and then I'm done, and I don't think about it anymore. Yeah, but I mean, if I don't do that, I won't stop thinking about it.
I played it for like a half hour, and I was just like, I got my fix. It was...
That was your reaction?
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'd be curious to see if I would have played it more over the weekend if I hadn't discovered, it's early release weekend for Guild Wars 2, and I didn't pre-order a copy, but they're still letting me buy a copy. So I bought a copy, and I played that pretty much all Sunday and Monday evening.
So tell us about Guild Wars 2.
Oh, man. So the first Guild Wars, I used to defend it. I actually attacked Josh because he was calling it just another MMO, and I actually played it more like Diablo, more like just third-person exploration Diablo. Like, I really liked the world from Guild Wars 1. Played it, probably it's my... the MMO I've played the second most. And then I really haven't been keeping up on Guild Wars 2 because they teased this game for so damn long.
Yeah. And like 4 years ago, people thought they were going to start playing this game.
Yeah. So I've lost track of what they were changing and stuff. But, mm-hmm. Aaron hit me up, told me he made a character. I was like, oh, I have a buddy in the game. Let's go play with the buddy. Well, the problem is I haven't been able to play with Aaron at all yet. So I'm still playing this as a solo adventure alongside of a lot of people. The coolest thing about, well, depending on your perspective, the coolest thing about Guild Wars 2 is they basically simplified the quest system. You have your one main story quest that is always pushing you along and into new areas. When you get into areas, you don't see like a bunch of quest givers with exclamation points over their heads or whatever. You'll be in an area exploring or walking to your story stuff, and an event will pop up, and it's a combination of protect these guys because these guys are attacking them. And then each event tends to have like three or four steps to it. Like, you protect people, you go pick up items for them. But so it still has all the same kind of MMO, kill a bunch of dudes or pick up a bunch of stuff and return it. But they've disguised it. They're a lot more clever with it. But when it boils down to it, it's still an MMO. It's a gorgeous game. I love the art style of the Guild Wars universe. And this like Guild Wars 1, I'm just wandering around looking at stuff. I'm enthralled with it. I thought I would go back and finish Darksiders 2, but I played this game for about 10 hours in the last few days and love the world. Don't know if I'm going to stick with it, but it definitely, its world's much more interesting to me than, for say, Star Wars The Old Republic. Never pulled me in from the environments. It was just, mm-hmm. Star Wars was all story. This is story plus exploration, and I can get a lot from just exploration.
Well, like, how big is this? Okay, Guild Wars 1, each level was like, you got funneled into very narrow kind mm-hmm. of areas. You could see stuff, but you couldn't jump. So there was no, like, well, they just, it was very easy for them to just kind of send you down a road and, like, you go, wow, look at this, the beautiful vistas, but you couldn't actually go to them.
Actually, like,
how is this one?
You can jump this one. you can jump, and they actually have, each area has all, I actually call them vistas that you can explore on the map, but you can basically 100% these areas, and that's what I'm obsessed with.
Well, I mean, understand like how open, how vast are these regions?
I mean, it seems as big as, and as connected as, say, World of Warcraft, not like funneling you into valleys, because, they did three or four expansions to the first game, and I think they just really fleshed out the world, and it mm-hmm. takes place, I don't know the storyline, but it takes place on the same world. I'm thinking it's like hundreds of years after the events or whatever, but everything seems well thought out, well connected and well designed. So it's the world that's amazing here, but it's the gameplay.
What's the combat like?
I mean, it has its tricks to it. Like, I like the fact that every time you pick up a different type of weapon, you have four or five skills that you have to unlock with that weapon, and then you can use them at all times. And, like, throwing axes versus broadswords versus my longbow and my shortbow, because I always play as rangers. And then...
It's still like a, click one, click two, mm-hmm. click three, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when it boils... Auto-attack?
Yes. When it boils down to it, that's what it... But...
How's the combat animation? Because that can actually help a little bit.
It's okay. It's not the best. So, it's not... What was that one game that was being promoted by the MMA guy? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, Terra.
It was Terra. It doesn't try to change any of that stuff up. And then Guild Wars is always based around PvP. But mm-hmm. like I said, the other weird thing is, and I don't like to judge MMOs their opening weekend, and especially even coming off of games like Diablo 3, there are some issues. I never had any issues logging in. The only issue is my server that I try to follow Aaron onto his server. And we haven't been able to play together. We haven't been online very much at the same time. But if we were, what it does is you get loaded into your area. And if that area on your server is full, they send you off into a
just instances?
An instance, different. An instance of the area that is from all different realms, all different servers. So you get splintered off and you get put into a queue to get into that area for your own server where you could meet up with your friends. So, but the
you can't like.
So there's no waiting, but you can't play with
people. But there's no way to meet up and say, like, all right, the two of us are going to go to this other one.
No, because they could also, like, by the time you get through the queue to get back into that area, they could have moved on to a different one. And you're, like, fast travel is big in this game, so...
Well, a lot of other games will have the same kind of things, but you would be able to say, all right, I'm going to go to instance 57.
Nope. There's no...
You go there, too.
There's no information. It just says, you know, you're in the queue for your server, you're in the overflow. For this area,
That's weird. And, I mean, that won't last very long.
So, but that's still. Haven't gotten to play with my buddies. And this game, I play Guild Wars 1 quite a bit with like 4 or 5 people. So, it's fun to run around. But
yeah, I thought 1 was cool. It always looked good.
Yeah,
the world was kind of interesting. This one looks a little more high fantasy, maybe. So than Guild Wars 1.
Yeah. But it's still got their weird takes on all the. Well, there's 8 classes, 5 races.
What are you playing?
I'm playing basically a Viking ranger.
Oh, that sounds cool.
So I wanted the pets. So I walk around with my wolf sevenfold and my polar bear kill switch.
Oh my god!
Does he engage?
Yes. I wish he would say engage, but
is your character's name Lincoln?
No.
Lincoln Park?
No, it is not.
Is it Nickelback?
No. I don't like Nickelback.
Okay.
That's where I draw the line, Josh. Yeah. I have tastes. Come on.
His name's Post-Black Album Metallica.
Ooh, wah-ah-ah-ah.
Then, let's see what else I got here. I've been playing an iOS game a ton in my spare time called 10 Million. This is a... Dungeon crawler / match 3 game / infinite running game.
What?
So yeah, there you go.
Okay. Cool. What else?
No, I probably put 4 or 5 hours into this thing. So I don't
what?
Know.
Why?
Because it's mindless. It's one of those just couch games that I keep trying to get the next thing. Is it's got a really, you know, it's well designed from that from the mobile standpoint of. Your guy basically wakes up in a dungeon or whatever, and you open the dungeon door, and you've got your little whole match 3 grid where it's kind of bejeweled style, where you're sliding the areas and trying to match up weapons, staves, shields, wood, stone, and treasures, and based on. You'll see him kind of running across the top of the screen doing the infinite running thing, and he'll get hit by either, you know, a locked door, a chest, or enemies. And then based on what you're doing, you have to match those. So I have to match swords to, like, hit the guy, or staves, or shields to defend myself. And they're constantly, the more time you take, they're pushing you further and further off to this left side of the screen. And when you get pushed off to the end, you have to start the run over, or you go back to, like, the hub world, and you can use your resources to level up your weapons, your armor, and your abilities, and eventually you're getting further and further in dungeon and leveling up your guy, and all the time you're accruing points, and the goal of the game is to get 10 million points.
So, it actually sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, that sounds awesome.
It's really addictive. And
did you ever play Henry Hatsworth on the DS?
Yeah.
Sounds kind of like that a little bit.
A little bit, yeah, I didn't even think about
that. The way the two... completely different games connect.
Because it's a lot more faster paced than, say, a Puzzle Quest. Because Puzzle Quest, the guy, they always wait on your next turn, but the stuff's always happening. And, like, you notice when, oh, shit, I've run into a higher level enemy and he just knocked me halfway across the screen and I need to attack him faster or get stronger to fight him. And, man, it is. And then every run you do, it's got, the three objectives, like try to get 5 matches in a row or kill an enemy only using these orbs because you're picking up items along the way, and then gives you points for those, and then gives you 3 more tasks the next time you're in. And it's just like that's exactly what you should want out of a mobile game. And then I want to say a little bit about Dust and Elysian Tail, because I did play that when it came out at the end of the Summer of Arcade. So this is the solo developed amazing looking 2D action adventure game in the Metroidvania style.
Yeah.
Man, it is gorgeous.
It is beautiful. And
like it looks like a Vanillaware game.
How does one guy do that? And again,
what are some of the other games that Vanillaware?
Grim Grimoire, what was the
Muramasa.
Okay.
And then they've got Dragon's Crown that's not out. Yeah, Odin Sphere.
Okay.
Muramasa the Demon Blade, but Dragon's Crown is the game that isn't, I don't know where it went, but that was the one they were working on that was like gone.
Just gorgeous 2D side scrollers with way too many frames of animation. It just looks more smooth than you ever thought possible.
And oh, yeah.
So, yeah, some dude made this game.
That's mind-blowing.
I'm still getting into the mechanics of the game. Josh and I played a little bit here before the show, and I've started to like it more. Like, it's a little bit slow going at first because I don't know, you know, how this world is going to work and how they're going to deliver quests to me, but it started to open up. You come across your first town, and then you get driven out in the world, and you finally get to the overworld map, and you can select between different areas. But progression is very Metroidvania.
It looked like, fairly story-heavy.
Yeah,
but
lots of characters.
But the characters are literally colorful, you know, figuratively as well. But I'm not. Don't look at me like that. I've done no furry bitching so far. I was just well voiced.
Yeah,
like they sound like professional cartoon voice actors. Mm-hmm. That's how I would describe the feel to them.
And everything's voiced, and they have a lot to say. And
but it's not like it wasn't too much. Like I got into it
at the end there. Yeah, like I've met some characters that I actually like mm-hmm. now. And because you kind of walk around with this. So he wakes up, Dust wakes up with amnesia, and this sword finds him and says he has a destiny. And all of a sudden he's a super awesome fighter because he has a sword, but the sword is a magical sword that was being protected by this, what do we call her, Tails meets Navi looking character.
So it's like Secret of Mana.
It is really JRPG. The story elements and a lot of the aesthetic stuff it obviously draws inspiration from kinds of games.
Why do you think everybody's so hung up on the anthropomorphic animals? Like, because I won't say it's a deterrent, but it caught me off guard. Like, I don't know, you know, they're like we were kind of talking about, like, if they'd gone like fantasy with it or like realistic with it, that's kind of been done too,
right?
So what do we really want? I don't, but it's it doesn't, but I even before, like, I played this before I read all of the like kind of people kind of coming out against it for those reasons. I will admit, when I started playing it, it kind of struck me as unnecessary. That was like,
well, the character designs are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only reason I ever bitch about it, because I don't like the people that like furries. Like, that's it. I don't care. The game's fine. It's really well designed. It is it's not for everyone. It's okay to not like that style. I mean, you could also say, like, well, I don't like brown sci-fi military shooters. Sure. And I would say, cool, that's cool. Yeah, me, you know, I'm kind of tired of that too. This is just, I don't know. I don't really have a huge problem with that. It won't keep me from playing the game.
But it is
a deterrent for some people.
Yeah. But if it does rub you the wrong way, I give the game about 2 hours to get going, because I've heard it's, you know, it's a 15, 20 hour game to explore all this world. It's pretty big.
And they don't sexualize a bunch of
weird.
No. It's not like that.
No.
Like that, there is a direction it could have gone there. It's more like kind of like a weird, it's almost SWAT Cats-y, or something like that.
I think some people might interpret it as kind of kiddie, too.
Oh, yep. Sure, so. You can see that, which is, to me sounds okay, because if it's family-friendly, then that means I don't have to stare at, you know, fox breasts, you know, all game long. And that's good.
It's always a quality you're looking for in your games.
Right. Yeah, it looks cool, though.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to keep on playing that one, but I think that's about all I got.
Cool. Cole, what have you been playing, man?
Playing a few games, not a whole lot, but spending a lot of time in the games that I am playing. Started off with Valkyria Chronicles, a Sega game that came out in 2008 for the PlayStation 3.
Oh, I always want to play this.
You'll love it. You'll really like it. So the game is a strategy RPG, cel-shaded. It looks amazing. The way they tell the story is kind of in book form, where you do chapters. And a lot of times, like, you'll have 5 cutscenes telling the story, and then you'll have a battle, and then you can go off into like side quests to like level up your characters. They're not even like quests; they're just like skirmishes that you can do. And I don't know, it's really fun. It's very similar to like a Final Fantasy Tactics, where if you have a bunch of characters and that have different roles, like you'll have an engineer that will kind of fix your tanks because you get tanks. You'll have your stormtroopers, your snipers, your healers, kind of everything that you get in RPGs.
Yeah, it's kind of got that front mission feel to it as well, right? I mean, minus the robots.
I never played any front mission games, okay. So I'm not exactly sure.
So minus the GoBots?
No, robots, but...
Sorry, I heard what I wanted to hear.
If it had added GoBots, it would be
Cole, did
a
you,
plus.
Did you play any of the other... Did you play Final Fantasy Tactics or any of the other...
I played a little bit of Tactics when I was younger, but it kind of just... I didn't have the dedication that the Moses brothers had to it.
Yeah, actually... Actually, Nathan, the older brother of Ethan, has written like 3 articles for us. One of his first ones was the review of this game, and he kind of made it off the scene like a much more accessible tactical RPG, or at least like a nice advancement to the genre that I've only read great things about this game, and it was never on my radar.
What's the... Okay, does this have vampires in it? Are the people vampires? No. Okay, there was another game that came out like around the same time that was a strategy RPG.
I think like
tactics kind of game.
Like,
you know what I'm talking about?
Not Disgaea.
No.
Yeah, it was Disgaea.
No, it was 3D, just like this, like the camera and stuff. No, okay. There's another game. If you're listening, you probably know what I'm talking about.
No, this game is kind of like a World War II alternate history kind of thing. With you play this like. The small country that gets invaded by the Empire, they're trying to go after this mineral called Ragnite.
love it when they come up with new names for
Ragnite. Yeah, they kind of the mineral kind of powers everything in their world, like it powers the tanks and all the weaponry. And this country, Gallia, has an abundance of it, and that's kind of the setup for the story. I'm probably about 6 to 10 hours in. It's a pretty lengthy game, or can be. But yeah, I enjoy it a lot. It's great. And like you said, it is a lot more accessible than like a Final Fantasy Tactics or a Tactics Ogre or something. But I definitely want to go back and play Final Fantasy Tactics at some point, maybe after getting through this, kind of getting a feel for having this much control over my characters and keeping them alive.
Well, yeah, but you, doesn't Valkyria Chronicles have a lot more depth in the actual, like, because it's like 3D camera, it uses the environments in a 3D way as well. It's not just like a snap to grid, right? So you get your guys behind cover, you can kneel, all that stuff.
Yeah, there's no grid really. You have you have a small map, and then you it kind of zooms in, like you have your overview, and you select your characters or which character you want to use, and then you kind of zooms in, and then you go you play like it's basically a third-person shooter at some points where you get real-time control. You have a meter that controls how long you can move, and you can only fire your weapon once each turn. So, like, if I go, say, I'm the main guy and I pick him and I run behind a barricade, crouch down, shoot a dude, kill him, and then I can still move if I have stuff left in my bar, but I can't shoot anymore. So I can move up to the next target, but I would just have to hide behind a barrier. And then when that target would shoot at me, like when I'm running up to the barrier, or vice versa, when an opponent is running towards the barrier, your character will automatically shoot at him, and then they will always return fire to after you attack.
Cool. I really like these kinds of like tactics / strategy
and their tanks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, I think I wrote it off as a Fire Emblem style of just like swords and magic, but had no idea that
it
was. No, it's guns and tanks. There's no swords.
That's awesome.
Like my biggest problem getting into these games though usually is the commitment to get going, like to really kind of get rolling in these games, because there's always like a ton of setup and tutorial stuff.
I mean, there is definitely a little bit of that, but it seems to flow quite well. Like I said, 5, maybe 6 to 10 hours in, and I'm kind of just getting on my own out of the setup where I could level up my characters individually now. which is kind of cool. You get like experience through the battles and the skirmishes, and then you kind of go into a training mode where you don't really do anything. You just kind of apply points to a slider and level up that way. But all your different characters will level up at once. Like if your engineers, you level up your engineers, everybody levels up.
Mm.
So it's a lot simpler than managing 100 characters individually. You know, you still have like 100 characters, but you're managing them as groups instead of individually. But yeah, it's gorgeous and it's fun and it's pretty accessible for a strategy RPG.
Worth going back to. Is that hard to find now?
I honestly found it at a used game shop for $15, and I had played a little bit of Nathan's copy back when it came out just to check it out on my own, and then didn't really get into it because I didn't play it a lot, and then I was just like, well, I saw it for $15, I had to get it.
Yeah, that's. One of these games that can really mix up the variety in games that you play, because I never
absolutely.
I'm always scared to get in those tactic games, but the only one I've gotten heavy into is the Advance Wars stuff. So
yeah,
I need to explore.
Well, and the only downside to there's a series of this is a series of games. I think there's three or four of them, but all the sequels came out on the PSP. So. You know how I feel about that system. Although I should be getting one or a Vita because of all the RPGs that come out on that
thing. Yeah, that's the only strengths of those systems.
Shit.
But I wrote it off just because the name was weird and I thought it was a fantasy RPG or a fantasy tactical RPG. I had no idea that it was, you said, guns and tanks and awesomeness.
Yeah, it's really cool.
For the record, Operation Darkness is the game I was trying to think of.
I'm glad we solved that.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
It's a similar kind of game.
Okay.
It's on the PS3 and the 360, though.
Okay.
Anyways.
For those of you...
Yeah, this game is PS3 only. All right.
So what else you got?
Then the final... I'm thinking the final Fantasy? Wii game I will ever buy. Appropriately titled The Last Story.
This is part of the Project Rainfall thing.
Right? Yeah, Operation Rainfall. One. Yeah, the two out of the three games got released, Xenoblade Chronicles and The Last Story.
Oh,
Pandora's Tower is supposed to be the worst one of the three. Mm. It's not coming out, I don't think.
You can get a PAL version, though.
Yeah, and I wouldn't buy it anyway, because it's a kind of a dungeon tower crawler, I guess you could call it.
Mm.
So, Last Story is Mistwalker. Hironobu Sakaguchi's studio. He did The Blue Dragon and
Lost Odyssey.
Lost Odyssey.
I played that one.
Which I've heard great things about, but I've never played it. Is it good?
I loved it.
Okay. Did you finish it?
No, three of the four discs. Because it's four discs.
So it's same kind of development. Developer that Last Odyssey had. Music is Nobuo Uematsu. Final Fantasy dudes, basically. The best Final Fantasy dudes. So I love this game.
Yeah?
It's so much fun. The story moves so fast. Like, there's never any dull moment so far. I'm about 10 hours in. I think it's only a 20-hour game.
Really?
So pretty short on the Japanese RPG side of things.
Not a lot of filler, though.
No, I mean, not so far. It seems like you're just kind of jamming through the main quest. A big thing that's people have kind of talked about in less than positive tones is the battle system, which if you don't change the setting to like manual control, I can understand that, because you're basically just controlling you're running your character up into an enemy and he's just swinging automatically. But if you change it to where you're manually hitting it like a Darksiders style or Zelda mm-hmm. style, where you're action RPG, it's a lot more fun that way. And there are different systems within the battling. Like you have this the gathering. You get this like shiny thing on your wrist at the beginning of the game, basically, and you have this magical power where it's called the gathering, where you hit the L button and all the focus of the enemies kind of go onto you, and so they'll be attacking you only and none of your peripheral characters, and so they can concentrate on just casting spells or beating the shit out of them or whatever. And then you have special moves outside of that gathering where there's an air slash, a wall climb into a slash that kind of diffuses other enemies' magic spells. Like each magic spell has a ring on the ground that you can diffuse.
Blitzes?
If it's a heal spell, yeah. If it's a heal spell, you go in there and your character will be healed in the ring. And then you can use those different rings like as offense and defense, so it's kind of cool. I don't know. It's very deep system for, you know, just it's not a turn-based strategy RPG or a turn-based RPG.
I didn't even know that. Honestly, when I see Mistwalker, I assume, oh, they're doing their next Final Fantasy and not calling it Final Fantasy, and I'll probably like it more than the game's called Final Fantasy now. But that's way different than what I expected.
Yeah, it's kind of the best Final Fantasy this generation.
Why the hell is this only on the Wii?
I think they just snatched up Mistwalker as a exclusive weird. After Lost Odyssey.
They did the 2 for 360. Lost Odyssey and Blue Dragon were 360 exclusives.
Did they do some DS games too or something?
Maybe.
That I don't know. It's just weird.
I don't know.
I don't really know much about them.
Sounds like Pandora's Tower is the worst of the three, but how's this compared to Xenoblade? Because I know you played that.
If you're going to buy one Wii RPG,
you're going to dust off the Wii.
Yeah. Yeah, I get these two games. Xenoblade is huge.
Right.
Like, during my ramp up to getting the last story, I'd go read reviews in the comments of people, and there we're talking about how some of them were 80 to 100 hours into Xenoblade Chronicles, mm-hmm. and the end wasn't nearly in sight. Just because there's a ton of side quests and everything.
That's a lot of time to spend in any game, though, no matter how good.
Don't play that game, Justin. That's what that says.
And it's a lot more colorful than the last story. The last story is very brown and gray and green, where Xenoblade Chronicles are bright colors. Hmm. But they're different games.
Two different,
Xenoblade Chronicles plays more like a single-player MMO than Last Story is more kind of traditional action RPG with a party.
Because it's a little bit more focused like that, though, I think that gives me much more reason to give it a shot on the Wii, because I could be kind of in and out with it if I do and don't like it, versus Xenoblade. It's kind of like, well, I got to put like 20 hours in to figure out if I want to put another 60 hours in.
Well, and another thing about the two is, like I said, the story just moves in the last story, whereas Xenoblade Chronicles, it's stretched out, obviously, over a long period of time, mm-hmm. and you find moments where you can put it down and not go back to it.
Is there voice acting and stuff in this one?
Yeah, it's actually really good.
Because I know that was a different translation for the Xenoblade one.
What are the characters like? I mean, are these like the adults?
They're adults, like late teens, early 20s, you know, weird hair, typical of the Japanese RPG. But they're all British accents because they didn't translate it for North American audiences. Yeah. So it actually sounds better to me.
I'd rather listen to British people talk.
Yeah.
People saying
Skites. The main character is good. Like, they're basically a group of mercenaries that kind of get thrown into this battle against the Gurak, which are your nemesis, and they all want to become knights. So they're not like pansies or anything. They're badass fighters who go out and fight different things for money. And there's this chick on your team who's just this complete horny drunk. That's kind of awesome because it's a chick, you know, instead of a dude,
right?
And so that was kind of a twist on the regular stereotypes.
And what happens?
Hey.
Oh, nothing so far. She just gets drunk in the bar that you guys meet up in all the time and talk shit.
Just drunk the entire game?
Yeah, I haven't really fought with her that much. She's
not very reliable.
She's too drunk. I don't want to get into the story, but I've been kind of off the main island for a while, and she didn't come with me, so.
I bet she was too drunk to travel.
Yeah. Too drunk.
Sweet. You don't get drunk and get on a boat ride, you know?
It's a great game. You can play with either the Wiimote or Classic Controller. I've been playing with Classic Controller. Oh. Seems a lot easier.
Can they?
It's really fun.
port it to the 3DS because then I play it. I'd buy a
3DS. It would look great on.
I would buy a 3DS for it, but I don't want to plug my Wii in to play it. That's where I'm at right now.
Play it on a computer with a dolphin.
Dude, I tried to set that up on a Mac. It was near impossible.
Did you flip over to Windows on it?
No, I didn't do that.
Well,
I should probably do that.
Yes, it's easy. Boot Camp is super easy to install.
Well, no, I have VMware, so.
No, don't do that. What are you doing?
Josh Lee says no.
Oh.
He's disappointed.
Cole, I just ask for help. I can help you. I can make
VMware,
it happen.
VMware is fine, Josh Lee.
God damn it. Well, not for what you're trying to do. Unless you're running it in like natively sometimes, VMware just for when you're not gaming.
Yeah, I don't game on it at all.
I'm just saying. You can boot to those. Yeah.
He is content with his PS3 right now. Well, except this on the Wii, so never mind. I'm not talking about anything.
What's that?
He's content with his consoles, is what I meant to say.
Cool. What else you got, Cole?
And then very briefly, I played the demo of Papo and Yo. I don't know really if that's the correct pronunciation of that or not, but it's a game about child tragedy, basically. This guy
got... Go on.
I know you're into it. He had an alcoholic father, and that's kind of a monster in the game. And it was kind of developed after, you know, kind of dealing with his past and the abuse that he suffered. But like I said, I didn't get into it. Like, I just played the demo. And I thought the gameplay design was really cool. You're this kid in Brazil, and... You see this little girl drawing things on the wall, and she like disappears through the wall. So you're intrigued, and then there's these white lines on different surfaces that you kind of pull out of the environment and make steps and.
What is this? What is ropes this on?
PS3.
It's on PS3. Oh. It's a downloadable.
Okay.
PS3 game. Came out the 14th of this month.
I think it was wrapping up their version of the Summer of Arcade. Mm.
Yeah. And it looks really good. I think it's an Unreal Engine game.
It's like really high concept, really metaphorical. I think reviews were saying that's like it's got a lot of like kind of buggy issues, but it may just be one of those kind of unique experience games that.
Yeah, I think that's more of what it is. Like, there's a area where you come upon this hopscotch kind of looking on the ground. And there's cardboard boxes that you have to pick up and move. And as you pick up the cardboard boxes, these whole buildings move to fill in this gap so you can cross this valley. So it's very kind of high concept and pretty creative gameplay, and it feels pretty good. That might be a purchase down the road, but yeah.
Who made this?
They're called Minority Medias.
Yeah, I'm not sure what else he's done, but it was like one of those.
The guy's name's Vander Caballero.
Yeah. Probably a name to watch. I don't know if the execution came through on this one, but but still, like,
he worked on the Army of Two games.
There's a feather in my cap, bro.
Are there high fives in this?
Fist bumps?
I didn't see any yet.
No, the PSN exclusives may have won this round. Honestly, like they had a much,
which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, because there wasn't. XBLA was not offering up much competition.
I think this is the first summer that I actually haven't purchased one of the games in the list.
Yeah, I it would have been Deadlight for me, and then that everyone said, you probably shouldn't buy this. But Dust, I will get Dust, and I haven't turned on my PS3 in months. But that's because I stopped. You know what? PlayStation Plus.
Yep. That too.
It's good. So intriguing, dude.
It's good. As soon as mine expired, I stopped using my PS3 because I have all these free games and I can't play them without my subscription. But I got so much free crap and so many sales for shit. Can you imagine if Xbox Live, your gold membership, got you discounts on all those Summer of Arcade games? How much you buy more shit?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Don't have to do that yet.
No. Oh, no. We don't need to.
I'd be really curious to see how the Xbox Live looks to PSN next gen. See what changes.
I mean, I think Sony's doing some really interesting stuff on that front.
I laughed at the announcement of PlayStation Plus, but it gets nothing but...
Well, the thing behind their... The stuff behind their paywall is way more intriguing than Xboxes, for sure. Like, I mean, you get all... You get Netflix and all that stuff for free, basically, on Sony's
platform. But the social integration, you know, as far as, like, talking with your friends, seeing what they're doing, all that stuff isn't nearly as good. And you've got so many people already in that other ecosystem. New consoles will not be a fresh start from that perspective, because that stuff all that stuff's going to carry over. Or between the systems probably too.
But I mean, I just think
I don't.
Microsoft's going to have to change up their services a little bit between what Steam's doing as far as just accessibility to games, and then.
And we've talked about kind of Microsoft's definitely leaning towards becoming the all-in-one box. Yeah. In your living room, whereas Sony's more concentrating more on games than Microsoft is, for sure.
And Nintendo is concentrating even more on
more than they usually do on games.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else?
That's it, no, that's it.
All right, cool. That's cool. Hey, that's kind of a pretty crazy list there so far. This is pretty awesome. All right, Brandon, what have you been playing?
Well, first, let me say, I haven't played like half of these games we talked about, so I've been just kind of listening, trying to learn about them. I was like, man, I never even heard of this one. Oh my God, I haven't heard of this one. Yeah. So,
if you got questions, we like to talk. So
it's kind of cool. Well, I don't even have a PS3, so me asking questions would be.
How do you go? Wait, how do you go this far without a PS3?
Wife and family.
What?
Wife and family.
So you bought like? Do you have Blu-ray player?
No.
No. Okay. Okay.
No. I haven't. I mean, honestly, I didn't have an HD TV until last year.
Whoa. Okay. Well, that'd do it too.
Okay. Yeah. So I didn't ever have that need.
Not that you would buy like a PS3 just for a Blu-ray player, but it was a great excuse to buy the system that you're like, I wouldn't mind playing Uncharted and God of War.
Use that for my wife, for sure.
But yeah. But it's like $300, and you're like, oh, but Blu-rays, Blu-rays.
I threw that out there at my wife once, and she just kind of scoffed at me.
I do not endorse throwing Blu-ray players at your wife.
Touché.
Or just the discs, even. You see, that was a Hellraiser 3. The dude had the CDs sticking in his.
Oh, yeah.
Told you, best movie trivia show on HorribleNight.com.
Blu-ray head.
So I've been playing kind of an eclectic list of games. First one I want to talk about is Might and Magic Clash of Heroes. This game's pretty much on any platform you can imagine, but I got it on Steam during the summer sale this year on day one. And I had my eye on it since I played the demo on Xbox Live last year. And just never kind of pulled the trigger. And I did with Steam, and I am so happy I did. It is really good. It's a puzzle. It's a puzzle game. And honestly, you don't really need to know much about the Might and Magic universe, which I honestly don't. But I don't know why this game is just so good. It's got a kind of a quirky story, but the battle system is just entertaining. It's basically you get set of units that have three different color schemes on them, and you move the bottom unit to another line or another column, and you try to match up a unit of three together, and they power up and they attack. And it is just really entertaining, and my son loves it. He will sit next to me and he'll go, hey, can I power him up? Can I do that? And, you know, it's fun to play with him side by side and walk through the game. So the art style is fantastic. They went the route with hand-drawn art for HD screens, which was a really good move. And I can't say enough good things about it. I'm very pleased with it. I got it for about $6 on sale. So
what is it with all these fancy match 3 games tonight? Like, this is,
I don't know.
What the hell?
What about fantasy?
It's really fun. There's some quirky story part I was telling you about. You know, some of the humor is kind of stretched. They try to make you laugh at a situation or a scenario. But it doesn't always land very well. But The battle system's really entertaining. It does have a multiplayer, which I haven't tried yet, but it's you just one-on-one or whatever. And
would that be turn-based, or is that like a real-time?
Oh, it's turn-based.
Okay.
It's turn-based. And you get a set of number of moves at the beginning of the turn. And then each, obviously, moving a unit is one move and things like that. But then there's things you can do if you can kind of, I call them combo moves, basically. If you take a unit out and it automatically creates a new column or a new set attack or wall, it gives you more moves, so it kind of replaces them. So if you can be creative with your units out there rather than one-off things, you get rewarded with a lot of moves. And you can stack your units, so if you can get multiple sets of three in a row, then they create a powerful unit, a super unit. And it's a fantastic game, so I would definitely check it out if you're interested in that, especially you, Cole.
Can you manage like your units or your army or something like outside of that puzzle game part?
Yeah, to a limited degree. Each you get three standard units, and each one kind of has their strengths. Like some of them power up in less time, some of them are stronger, some of them have a higher defense, and then you get kind of hero units that have special things. For instance, the undead units, the ghost, while she's charging, doesn't take any damage, so anything that attacks her during that time doesn't hurt her. So she's a real useful unit to have. And there's other units, as they're charging, they take power away from enemy units and stuff like that. So you get to choose which ones you want to take into battle at any time. And as a hero that you are, you get to get artifacts or items that can give you special other bonuses, like revive if you've been killed, or make your wall stronger, make the enemy wall weaker.
Are these like strictly one-on-one battles then?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it's really cool. It's pretty good pace. It gets you right into battles pretty quickly within the first 10-15 minutes.
Would you?
And what?
I was going to say, would you say that it's kind of like a good lead-in to RPGs for puzzle game fans, as far as, does it lead with the puzzle elements, or does it lead with the RPG elements?
I think it leads with the RPG elements. It's very story-driven. Like, these battles aren't just for battle's sake. Very story-driven, and in between battles and things, you go up levels, and your units go up levels and things like that, too. You don't get as much character progression as far as skill trees or anything. But, there is experience in kind of juggling magical items. You usually have to make a choice, do I want this unit or do I want this item moving forward? And
does this game have like a world map?
Yeah.
Sort of?
Very limited, yeah. The way the story is based is you are the children of some other heroes that are fallen in battle through a third party threat, basically, and you play as one of those children in each of the regions, and you go through their storyline, and eventually their storylines kind of cross near the end.
What's that game, that other puzzle kind of
Puzzle Quest
RPG game? Yeah, is it?
That's why I've been trying to compare it in my mind, especially
similar. Yeah,
and then coming off of 10 million, I was like, so 10 million must be, that's like the simplest one. I'm trying to figure out if this is more or less complicated than Puzzle Quest.
Well, this sounds more like there's way more story to it, but also the puzzle elements sound more like, because you kind of have like an army.
Mm-hmm.
It's not strictly just match three. It sounds like there's some other strategy to it than,
because
when you're playing, you're basically playing Bejeweled in Puzzle Quest. Right. That's it.
Yeah,
way deeper than Puzzle Quest. Which,
yeah, this
good or
one
bad.
You can have the columns of three, or you can three or more units in a row create a wall, and they combine and create those walls for defense, obviously.
But you're still like attacking something though, kind of like Puzzle Quest, where you're doing damage to another thing.
And they do a lot of different little battles too. When you fight certain bosses or are at a certain point in the story, instead of just dealing as much damage as you can to the enemy. Some of them are, you have to hit these switches at the same time with your attacking unit. So that it requires you to kind of plan out where you're placing your units, and because they all have different charge times. You know, a charge time is 3 rounds, for example. So you have to kind of plan, okay, well, I won't make this unit go yet, so I can get X done. So it's been very entertaining, and it's challenging at times. There's been some battles where I'll do it 3, 4, 5 times before I finally beat it, because it does get very challenging at times, and I like that.
So. That sounds really, really much more interesting than I originally thought.
I wrote it off pretty fast from some screenshots and in the box blurb.
No, then
I'm glad you actually.
You mentioned that you've been playing it with your son, because I was trying to think, like, would that be a good intro to RPGs for a kid? And as far as just like getting to understand like leveling up or inventory or just kind of advancing those things. And but after this description, I was thinking that might be a little bit too far from him. But if you're looking for that, Puzzle Quest might actually kind of fit that build, because you can almost literally ignore the story and just play the puzzles, and then you kind of pick up that stuff along the way. I don't know if that's useful information, but that's all that was running through my head. And I was like, I wonder if these, like, if puzzle games can help bridge some of these gaps into other genres of gaming, what I was thinking about.
Well, I think it does. I mean, Hunter, the other day wanted me to play Clash of Cars, as he was calling it. He got out all his Hot Wheels and other cars, and he was laying them out on the floor and lining them up just like the game. And he was making up attacks for each kind of car. You know, he would say, this one's got lightning, this one would turn into a robot, and he would get a robot out of another toy set and replace it. And so he was using his imagination to kind of fill in those gaps that he doesn't understand. But I think there is a little value there to bridge the gap on new games that he hasn't really been introduced to yet.
Wasn't he creating his own Plants vs. Zombies game or something else like a while back?
Yeah, with our bodies.
Yeah.
I had to do certain motions.
Future game designer, man.
Certain plant, and he was a different kind of zombie based on his movements, and I would have to figure out what kind of plant to beat that zombie.
Man, he's deep in the mechanics on this stuff.
He's told me before he wants to create video games. He wants to make video games.
Has he ever done any like board game kind of stuff? Because that's the mechanics of those games are way in your face.
We're stealing them for our side.
If he comes up with a good idea, you can use that. What, who are the guys we met? The gamecrafters.com.
They'll build it for you.
And you can order the components for his games.
He's all the time making his own rules up and changing.
Well, I'm just saying, he could be publishing those. Pretty cool.
So I was also looking up more info. So Capybara Games made this, and they're the ones behind Sword and Sorcery.
Yeah.
And then Super Time Force is their next one that's got a lot of buzz around it. But
how is that not out yet?
It was very early concept when they showed it. Like, they only had what they were showing
for Super Time
Force. But anyway,
good demo then.
But just, they've been making a lot of interesting stuff. Just kind of a developer to keep an eye on.
That is cool.
They definitely are. So, it's funny when he hears the opening sequence when the game's loading from across the house. I'll hear his feet running. He knows I'm playing Clash of Heroes. So it's interesting. And then going off that, I've been back into Minecraft on Xbox 360.
They still have that.
But what I've been doing is I created a world that he and I can play in split screen, and I've been teaching him a lot about, you know, you need these items to craft X, and here's why you would craft that, and why you need this. And he and I have built a little house on the beach, and he's still relatively simple in the mechanics of the game. So basically, anytime it starts getting into nightfall, he goes back home and he doesn't go anywhere, and he won't go down into a mine with me because it's too dark.
What if you go through with torches first? Will he go in then after it's lit up?
He hasn't yet, because he says he's afraid of skeletons.
That's cute.
And we don't play it on peaceful, because I do want to teach him, you know, that, you know, there are dangers in the game and consequences, you know, to not always just play in peaceful mode and make it as easy as possible. So I put it on easy, but at the same time, there's creatures to worry about.
And life, sometimes you've got to lose.
Yeah, I know.
So that's so a good lesson.
But when he plays, he will be kind of my scavenger. He'll go around the house, and he knows how to chop down the trees, make the axes, get
There are laws against that shit.
Not in my world. You know, and he helps me kind of build the house out. I've taught him how to create different materials and stuff like that. So I've been, I do play with some my other friends on there, but I've been doing that a lot lately with him.
It's funny.
And it's really cool. It's really cool.
That never occurred to me. We talk about playing that game a lot with friends and building things with friends, but building that with your son, that's really cool. And it kind of the strength or the benefit of that, of the console version, to be able to play split screen like that and kind of teach him on the fly. I mean, granted, you could probably do that with a couple laptops, but still, I never occurred to me that of that possibility.
How old is your son again?
He's 5. Go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I've had a lot of experience with like 10 years old, you know, and up
at your summer camp.
With, yeah, at camps. But it's always cool seeing kids experience Minecraft and like just how they all play it differently. It's like it's different things to different people. I mean,
so, once a kid plays Minecraft, do they go back to Legos? Can they go back to Legos? Or
yeah, he loves Legos.
Okay.
Yeah, he absolutely loves Legos. Actually, I picked him up from school today, and he had all their Legos out.
Well,
all of them.
Probably by the time you're of the age where you're making like really large, complicated things in Minecraft,
yeah,
or you're, you know, grabbing like the Tekkit mod or whatever. Or Technic. So that would be like the point where you're probably too old for Legos, maybe. So
you graduate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny when I play Minecraft and then when I go to play Legos with him, I'm so much better at creating in Minecraft. Like, I can't look at the Legos and go, I can make this. No, I always sit there and stare at it for a while.
Well, don't melt down the Legos. You can just use them as is.
That might be a problem.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the kid's brain, you know, a child's brain, it does these. It's like, what was the last thing that you saw or did? And you're just going to make that, you know? So maybe instead of like relying on this internal drive to do that, maybe you should just think logically, like, okay, I should do that. And so, like, what's the last movie you watched and make something from that? Because that's what kids do. Like, you just watch Star Wars, you're making an X-Wing out of your Legos. That's what I always did, right?
Yeah.
Like, what's the last movie you watched?
Oh, my God. Transformers.
That could be complicated.
Done.
That can't
you
be
can
complicated.
Tell, I made Optimus Prime.
I would want to make like a Lego that would actually transform. Yeah.
You can do that. It's probably a YouTube video on how to do it, you know? It's like, that's the thing about today. Like, you can cheat.
I haven't seen... I know they've been talking a little bit about the patches for the 360. What's the most recent stuff they rolled out for it?
They rolled out a couple of skin patches. Okay. Or skin packs. And then they rolled out...
Enderman?
Pistons.
Okay.
You got Enderman,
so
too, now,
pistons,
right?
Now. What's that?
Don't you have Enderman now?
No, not yet.
Oh, that's what you're going
to... That's supposedly the next one.
Okay.
The next one's supposed to get us up to, like, 1.81.
Okay, roughly, yeah.
We're at 1.73.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They don't have the Adventure or the Enderman or anything like that.
So you're like, this is like two versions behind, which isn't bad considering the patching process and that it's not just a straight port.
It's over
yeah.
3.5 million sales at this point.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
So I'm sure they got some deals now to patch it whenever they want.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, go ahead.
What is that, like $15,000 a patch? All right. No problem.
You know, and the we haven't really introduced Pistons yet to the boy, but us group of friends, we've been playing with that. So
the piston, I had a kid I was saw in our summer camps. He'd made a like this, basically like a moving platformer kind of level out of pistons and redstone. It was kind of a cool concept. I talked him through it kind of, cause we were talking about like, what do you do with the redstone? It was like kind of challenging him, like, do something with, you know, do something a little more complicated. Use the redstone, you know, use it, you know, put a circuit together. And he's just like, I don't know what to do. And we just kind of talked it out, and he landed on this. It was like a little chasm, and it was safe at the bottom. There's water, so you could land in it, go to a ladder, and climb back up if you didn't make it. But what you do is you hit a button, and then you have to run and jump across these platforms. And the pistons, they're the sticky ones, they come out,
and there's the platform will stay out there for just a second, and they go in order because there's the delay little repeater things. And so you have to run and jump and time it to get across this, you know, big gap. It was like a really neat kind of way just to show off like how to use all those elements, the pistons and the redstone.
We always don't know what to use or what to make with the pistons. So
that, and then the doors, you know, you can make doors that slide open and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we did that with our tracks for our mine carts going from location to location, so at night we don't have zombies just waiting for us. Like,
cool.
I'm glad that we did that. So, which I do have a funny story. James was playing with me and my brother-in-law, and we built this in this castle inside this mountain, and we had mine carts going to and from to a couple of mines and our old original base and things like that. So he said he needed to go and get sand. And we had a track over on one side of the mountain that we had not finished yet, but from the inside, it looked like it was finished. So if you put the cart there and hit the button, it would launch you, open the door, and you would go. But like I said, it wasn't finished, so the track would just go right off the mountain. And it did land on sand. So we told him, if you go on that mine cart, you'll get sand, you'll be fine. And he said, okay. So Caleb logs off, and it's just me and James, and I hear, son of a bitch. And he goes, Caleb said there's sand, and I used the card, and I'm dead. So he flew off the mountain and crashed into the ground. It was a good 40-50 block drop. And he launched very fast off, because we had a power rail that just shot you out there.
You should play Roller Coaster Tycoon then, because you'll love killing people in that.
We played with that. Like I said, from the inside, you couldn't tell it was broken.
I was going to say, I played Coaster. Do you remember? That was a first-person one where you would build coasters and ride it.
I remember Coaster.
Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, you can ride them in first-person.
Well, this is
well, this is probably better graphics than that.
Well, here's a roller coaster hipster here.
I'm just saying. Warcraft 1 days, isn't it? Coaster?
It's
way back then.
It's probably, I can't imagine what the field of view distance was on that, but anyway.
Or how many polygons were on the screen at a time.
Yeah.
So, I've also played the Left 4 Dead 2 expansion on Xbox 360, Coldstream, and the map is awesome. It's very well balanced, really fun to play, but they have some major kinks to work out on the 360 version, especially with their servers. I can't tell you how many times things crashed or would drop us out of the game, or at one point dropped everyone but me out of the game, so I was just by myself running around trying to survive constant attacks from the enemy. But Coldstream itself is fantastic. It's just running around the woods, PC, but the 360 version just has a lot of bugs that I don't think to this day they have all fixed yet.
I've played Coldstream. I actually haven't beat it yet, but that's because we were playing on the realism on advanced difficulty, and it just constantly throws hordes at you, and it was so friggin' hard. But it was cool, just like running around those woods, and then there's those times where you get separated just a little bit. It's so easy in realism mode because you can't see your teammates through walls and trees and stuff.
Get lost.
Oh, shit. You get separated. You think like, everyone else is running. You turned around. You stopped to shoot. You turn back around and they were gone. Like, there's like 2 seconds. Oh, shit. And then you get smoker, you know, grabs you or whatever.
I really like the events in the Coldstream map. They do them really well. The very first map, when you have to open the door to get down into the sewer to get into the safe room, and it's just a constant wave. And if you don't open the door all the way, you can't get in, but there's just zombies just streaming through the doorway and on top of you from above, and you just can't get in. And if you all don't get in at the same time, it is almost impossible to get everybody back together and into the safe room without dying.
Sometimes you just have to send somebody ahead.
Yeah.
Like, we'll hold them off. You go on your own.
Yeah. There's just unique elements about Cold Stream that they didn't do in either Left 4 Dead. Yeah, which is, you know, like walking across the log in the first map, and it slows you down. You have to all walk in a single file line,
yeah.
And you're just waiting for a charger.
Yeah,
because you're all lined up,
uh-huh.
And the bridge going across the bridge and all those events and things like that. Mm-hmm. But to your point, it's really easy to get lost in that map, I think, in comparison to some of the others. Even when I was new to some of the others, I got lost a couple times in Cold Stream, just walking in circles.
At least there's like a little bit of sunlight. If it was like if it was like pitch black in the woods, no good. That would be no good.
So how at this point is a Left 4 Dead expansion released as buggy as that is on 360? Like I don't understand like the rush of it. Like it's not.
Well, it sounds like maybe it's a lot of it is the infrastructure side and not the actual map, right?
Yeah, I would say most of the bugs were that. There are some on the map side that we did notice. For instance, if you're playing campaign and not versus, and you're playing by yourself and you get smoke, your bots don't recognize that you're smoke. So you're just dangling there, and your bots are just walking around screaming your name, but they're not doing it.
Cool. This was made.
So there's just a lot of little issues.
Yeah, what was the release?
What?
Oh, yeah, what was like the release schedule for this one? I know, was it PC first?
Yeah. It was PC. It was and it was free.
Okay.
I mean, all the PC stuff was free. But this is the thing. Valve would, I'm sure, would like for it to be free on the Xbox version. I think they've said that before, but you know, that's not really kind of how it works with Microsoft. Yeah. But I thought that originally this was like a community map or something that got
promoted.
Right? Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Valve had some sort of contest to vote between certain maps and Babylon.
Yeah, because when it first got released on PC, it was like beta.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like the beta version of the map. So it was like, so they did a lot of testing and stuff. So I figured, you know, well, by the time it got to 360, it would be a little less, buggy or whatever. But cool. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, we're sticking with this here. We've got pretty good variety of stuff. All right.
Are you gonna let us down, Josh?
I am not.
Okay.
I promise you, because I have been playing. Actually, I beat the single player, the campaign of Fall of Cybertron, Transformers.
What, in like 2 days?
One. But it's not terribly long. It's like 15 chapters, and each one's probably like, you know, half hour or something. This game is awesome. It's fun. Super fun. If you like Transformers,
I do.
You will shit your pants playing this game.
What if I don't like shitting my pants?
But you like Transformers?
Yeah.
No choice then.
I think there are
going to happen
over the counter medication you can help you can take before
Depends.
You play.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Yeah. Or their methods.
was it Fall of Cybertron we played at the Horrible Night Out?
No,
that was War for Cybertron. War, that was the first one.
War.
Yeah, and that multiplayer in Fall looks to be very similar. I haven't played the full version multiplayer, but we did the demo.
Except
you have way better customization in Fall.
Create your own Transformer.
Yeah, and you can use parts from the actual characters this time around and make, you know, if you want to look
Starscream Prime.
Or then you know, go for it. You can do that. So there's more variety and stuff there, and there's they brought the Horde mode back. I'll just mention these because I
escalation.
Again, yeah, yep.
I hate that all these companies have to like rename the same modes.
Yeah, what you know? Yeah,
it doesn't serve any purpose because it just confuses me.
None of us have come up with a better name, so we just call it Horde mode. Yeah. Everyone just says that, so you know.
And Cliffy B gets a check.
Every time. But they did change that a little bit. There's 4 or 5 levels there in the escalation mode, but you don't just pick your random multiplayer dudes. Mm-hmm. There are specific characters from the story, like canon characters that you play as. And they're all like, it's like class based, and that's all you get. And so you may have one level, maybe Optimus and Wheeljack and Sideswipe and Jazz or whatever, you know, like Bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one, your Decepticons, and it's this specific group. But which is okay to me.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds fun. I like playing roles. You know, that's cool. Like a little role playing sometimes. But anyways,
what's your Transformers safety word?
So, roll out. So, okay, so the single player campaign. Now we did the demo for Game Curious.
Mm-hmm.
And that was they just took parts of three levels.
Sure.
And so you got to kind of see the variety there. And the variety and the reason I think they did that is there's a wide variety of shit that's going on here. I mean, you can look at it and say, you know what, it's a shooter. It's a third person shooter.
I said that for years.
Unreal Engine shooter. Yeah. Okay. However, it's really, really very Transformers-y. Like, if you liked the cartoon, you have to play these games. Like, you absolutely have to. If you grew up with the cartoon, you owe it to yourself because your inner child is going to bust out. It's going to climb out of your chest and it's going to grab the controller and it's going to go, yeah! And then you're going to enjoy this game a lot.
Oh, pass out.
Because no, you're going to, it's chest gonna, is it's going to play.
Your chest is open.
It'll be like, what was his name from Total Recall? The little.
Yeah. No,
Quato or something. whatever. So yeah, again, the variety here and the story and all that shit is awesome. What the whole game takes place like right. Do you remember the pilot episode of Transformers, the G1 show? Like at the very beginning, there's you've got they're like Autobots are running to the Ark, the big yellow ship that they fly to Earth with, right? And there's the war on Cybertron is just like tearing the place apart, and they're just like, we got to, you know.
Cybertron
is completely fucked, so we got to get out of here. Right. Yes, it has fallen. And so they're like, well, let's get on this big-ass ship, and let's find somewhere else to go. And this whole game, Fall of Cybertron, is about that. It's about, like, when the game starts, the Ark is basically built, but it can't launch just yet. It needs some gas. Got to get some gas. So it's just like, we need to gas it up. We need to gas it up, and it needs a little wax. And,
take two of every Transformer. And,
yeah. Yep. Yeah. And some there's a couple dudes, you know, get left behind.
Are there any Transformer obviously. Ladies?
Yeah, but you don't see them in the game. But yeah, there were like what's the there was the pink one. Oh shit, what was her name? You know the like the skinny one just turned into like a little motorcycle thing.
Guess,
or a little car.
It'll sound sexist.
No. It was shit. I can't remember. Whatever. There were girls. Not many, though. There weren't a lot of ladies. Mm-hmm. But they don't procreate. Transformers don't have dicks.
Right.
So, whatever.
They are robots, yeah.
That's not how that works. Except Megatron. He's kind of one. He's what a big giant dick, man. Oh, that guy. So just like the first game, this has you playing as both Autobots and Decepticons. Although this one, it's not just like two separate campaigns. You do it in order, and then it goes back and forth between them. And the story just, it's like it progresses in a pretty natural kind of way. It doesn't do like while this was happening, this was happening. It doesn't really do that. It's actually like kind of in a straight timeline. Which, I mean, I'm always the guy that likes to play the good guys in games, especially fuck Transformers, man. I hate the Decepticons. I want to Decepticons creeps, you know? I want to blast them. They actually do a really good job with these characters, and the Combaticons are my favorite characters in the game.
Remind me what those are?
They form Bruticus.
Okay.
There's like a helicopter, a jet, a tank, some other, like an armored, like an APC looking dude and like a car thing. And they form the giant, you know, I think we played as him in the demo. You saw it like you form Bruticus is like all five of the Combaticons joined together in one giant robot.
Yeah.
So you play as Vortex, the helicopter one. And that is the most fun I had doing the transforming
and stuff.
That's funny.
That's in the demo too. That's the level.
Yeah.
The demo.
That level's awesome. And so you're like the transforming part of the game. I've heard some other people complain about the levels not giving you a lot of opportunity to transform, and like that just to me means they don't know how to use it because you're supposed to really just transform. I mean, I was back and forth sometimes. Mm-hmm. It'd be like I got a gap to close on a dude, I turn into a fucking car and run him over, or like get up in his face, transform back. Like I was transforming constantly. Like why shouldn't I? I'm a damn Transformer. It's that's what I do. But the helicopter level, or those vortex, that was awesome because that was a huge... I cannot believe what they did with some of those levels in the Unreal Engine. Like, they're really massive. Like, they've pushed it to the limits. You know, that's how I feel. So that was really fun. There's you saw Metroplex, right? Okay, so even though I knew he was coming and all that, the introduction of him was awesome. So awesome. It's so huge. He plays a huge part in the story. Fantastic. I loved all that stuff. Let's see what else. There are sections. You play as Optimus, obviously, and there's some Megatron and some little bit of Starscream and that. But there are some levels where you go on a mission, like a little side mission, as Optimus sends Jazz and Cliffjumper. Jazz is like the white, like, Porsche police car, and in the old, you know, Transformers. And then Cliffjumper was a little red car, kind of like Bumblebee. But so the two of them go off to try to find Grimlock because he's left his post. And Optimus is like, where the hell's Grimlock? We got to find him. Everybody else is like, oh, he's deserted us. And Optimus is like, no, there's got to be a good reason for him to do that, you know, because he's Optimus. So you play as these two guys, and Jazz has like he's got a grappling hook. And so you can't just grapple anything, any ledge, any kind of ledge anywhere you can grapple, basically. So you can traverse very quickly that way. And then there's certain things in the environment, like, you know, to progress to another, to, you know, rip down a door or pull down a pillar or that kind of stuff. But the level design on his stuff I thought was really good, really well done. And his car form is the only thing in the game that looks like an actual, like, he looks like a freaking car. It's got like a space spoiler, you know, he's really fast. That was really fun as him to drive around. And then a Cliffjumper does a stealth thing. So he goes invisible, and I hate stealth levels. Loved this one. Like, it was I thought it was awesome. I thought they did it really well, because you can still kill everything. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, you know, I got in some trouble. Like, well, that's kind of the theme of the gameplay for the whole thing, is like, you have a ton of options. Like, like, you can just do whatever, you know, you could just run around as a car the whole time if you wanted to, probably. Like, you know,
I heard complaints that the action was boring in this game, and that it's like, because it's redundant, or you're killing the same generic robots over and over again. But just like, the variety's up to you how you want to play this, and it gives you so many options. And
shooting those robots is pretty satisfying. Like, I like blowing up Transformers, you know. And the guns are the weapon variety is really good. I kind of have my favorites, and I upgraded those, because you get basically like money, and you spend it to upgrade your weapons that stays that way across the whole campaign, and you play it again. That's your new game plus, basically, is your upgraded stuff. So that stuff was really good. Grimlock, you play as Grimlock, and that's pretty cool too. Like, everyone loved Grimlock, right? Mm-hmm. And from the cartoons. I mean, that was like he was a favorite, you know? He's a big T-Rex.
Yep.
And he's dumb. And everyone likes that. But the all the Dinobots are in the game. And you interact with all of them. And at times there's some parts where you control another one.
Yeah.
But the storyline around them and with the stuff that's going on, it's really messed up. It's actually like messed up. If I was a kid, do you remember in the Transformers movie what happened to Optimus Prime?
Yeah.
You know? Okay. Well, like, there's times in this where that tone of like, oh, damn, that's kind of dark. Like, almost like too dark for kids or whatever. Mm-hmm. There were some moments like that in this game. The whole thing felt very adult. I feel like this whole thing is made for us now. You know, the adults that used to watch Transformers, not like for kids today.
Not the Michael Bay fans.
But, yeah, you know what? You could get away with it, probably, if just, like, that's all you knew was the movies. But you'd be like, where's all the humans at?
Where's Sam Witwicky?
Well, his name's Spike, first of all, damn it. the Grimlock stuff, the Dinobot stuff was fun, and again, really varied. Like, you can't even just transform into the dinosaur, the T-Rex at all times. Like, you don't have guns either. He's just got a big ass sword, but Grimlock is like three times the size of a normal Transformer. and you're just smashing through dudes that before you had to like figure out a strategy to, oh, I got to get behind this thing to hit its weak spot. Like, no, he just grabs him and throws him, you know? And, but you have like a rage meter that builds up, and when it gets full, you can, then you can transform into a T-Rex if you want. And you just, it's like Godzilla.
Is it sort of like a primal rage?
Oh.
yeah, it kind of is. And he, and no one worships him though, but they, I think they would if Megatron wasn't around.
Say the giant monkey Decepticons. Mm-hmm.
All of the voice acting is awesome. There has to be a bunch of these guys are either from the show or they just studied.
That's what made me so giddy about the first one. Just like just the authenticity and that they cared about the story and it sounds like they're wrapping it up in an entertaining way and makes me want to get back in Transformers and
and they throw
do
in
stupid things with my money on eBay.
this will make you want to buy some toys. Man, they just do such a good job of just throwing in tons of fan service stuff, like just all like little moments that were from the shows or.
And I think just regardless of the Transformers stuff, this is just, and I can only speak to War from War for Cybertron, but that they've, this is just a fun video game and you don't get to slap that label on all that many games lately.
It's well made, looks great. The gameplay is completely fine. And at times, very fun, like super thrilling. Overall, though, like the story and the pacing of everything, I never got bored. I mean, this was basically a one sitting thing, you know. I have to say too, the final, I think it's like the whole last chapter of the game is so well done. It has this sequence where you're going back and forth between Autobots and Decepticons. The most seamless possible like transitions they could have possibly done. Like you're doing this, you're controlling this guy and then you see the other dude and then boom, you're controlling him now. And then like, but it's, you don't have, it's like scripted, but just the way it's done and the way it goes back and forth, like it was by the end there. By the time that thing wrapped up, I finally got it. What they were doing with kind of forcing you to go back and forth between Autobots and Decepticons the whole game. Like, even if you don't like, to agree with the Decepticons, like, you still, like, I don't relate to what Megatron's trying to do or whatever, but I totally appreciate what is happening and I could really enjoy it. You have to play this game. Finish War for Cybertron or not or whatever, but, it's great and I think you should play that, but this is really, really well done.
Awesome.
It's just solid. It's so solid. And you know what? If you just you don't have time for it, if holidays roll around and you get and it's like $30 and you don't buy it, I will smack you.
And it's like you're not talking to any
Amazon list.
Yeah.
You're not talking to anyone specifically. It's that that is directed at all people.
Yep.
Because the funny thing is the same middling reviews that I read around War for Cybertron that made me put it off until we finally fucking played it, and I'm like, holy shit, Josh Lee was right about something. I read the same one.
Friction, he doesn't write anything, but he's right about something.
do you remember the epic opening from the demo, that little video that played when you left it on the like the title screen? That was like kind of how I felt constantly through that game. It was just always so epic. The music is really freaking good. It was really good. That is the best title screen, like the title menu music of a game in a very long time. Besides, maybe like the first Uncharted had maybe better music. That was it. It's awesome.
When's the last time I can't, like Josh is sitting here describing this, I can't think of the last time I was that like thoroughly excited or enjoyed a game as much as he is emoting right now. Are you guys getting any of that?
Oh, yeah.
Enthusiasm is dripping from you guys.
I'm excited and I haven't even played it. Except for War for Cybertron that on that horrible night out. And I thought that was a blast that we were all killing each other. And most of the time, I don't even think we were Transformers. We were just the vehicles.
And I'm not saying we're all going to get that from this game or from Transformers, but just like, there are very few games that hit me to the core like Josh has just experienced, and I'm really jealous of him right now, is all I'm saying.
Just like soup, just really, just like pure fun, like the whole time. And yeah, again, it's got a kind of a mature tone to it the whole time through, but it's also got it keeps the cheesiness, mm-hmm. the little cheesy lines and stuff from the show. It's always there, but it's just like, I mean, really, it's like High Moon is saying, you remember when you loved the cartoon when you were a kid? Cool. And you know how you like video games now and you're older? Here, they just like smash them together and jam it in your face. And you're just like, Transformers!
That's the commercial.
Yeah. It's fucking awesome.
You need to write their marketing.
Okay, so then I started playing Binary Domain. Remember this game?
Remember writing this game off, yeah.
Yeah, me too, right? And I picked it up for like $5 on a Steam sale.
I mean, what couldn't it have literally been titled generic third-person shooter? Mm-hmm, like, that's how it came across.
But then you remember how there were some people going like, you know what, this actually, there's some things going on here if you look past other parts of it, mm-hmm. right? Well, this game is, I think, going to be my Vanquish for this year.
Whoa!
You know?
That's places.
I know, yeah. I know you are going to be like on board with this. It's a shooter. It doesn't do any of the shooting really particularly like fantastically. It's serviceable. It's like set like 40 years in the future, and you're part of this special task force. It's like an international task force of like, you got like, special forces guys, MI6, like, these different specialists that get like recruited into this, super team. But your thing is like, you get sent, to investigate or eliminate, neutralize, AI, like rogue AI kind of stuff. So basically a company has figured out how to make androids that on the outside look and act like people. And this kind of just happened. Like, we've had robots for a while, and we just now, boop. So, Terminators, basically. It's, Terminator. You're so far in the game, I'm not shooting people that look like, or, robots that look like people. I'm shooting robots that still look like robots, but I'm sure that's got to change at some point. I think shooting robots is actually kind of fun. I'm just tired of shooting people. I don't feel bad about it necessarily. It's just like, it's boring. Like, I know where all the squishy parts are already, And on robot, it's like, I want to see some other stuff. I want to see some
bolts,
some junk. Yeah. I want to see some junk. And these robots blow apart very nicely.
You need to play Hard Reset next.
Yeah. Somebody mentioned that. But I really enjoy how the way that the robots rip apart reminds me of like a light gun game or something, it's just, I don't know. It's just a thing. If you play it, you'll know what I'm talking about. So it sounds like, okay, you infiltrate Japan to try to find out this, find this guy who supposedly, the United States government thinks is the guy who's behind all these, robot infiltration of, companies and governments and stuff. And, your guy, pretty generic hero. Like, he's like, he's real cocky. He's kind of wise cracking and, he's kind of a badass. But somehow he's like, he's kind of likable and he's got like a soft side to him a little bit. But the cast of supporting characters are awesome. Big Bo is the blackest dude in video games since Coltrane. And he's even bigger and probably better than Coltrane. I like this guy. He is a gigantic Delroy Lindo. He looks like him and he sounds just like him. I had to look it up on IMDb. Delroy Lindo does not play Big Bo. It would surprise you when you hear him talking. He's just always calling you bro. He's hilarious. He's super horny. He's always looking at the Chinese girl's ass. Like, he's hilarious. And every time he sees some shit that's going like something crazy, it always zooms in on his face and his eyes get so big. They're like popping right out of his head. And he's always like, oh, damn. And It's so I fucking love this guy. He's always on my team. Like, you get to choose, and I would never go anywhere without Big Bo. And like, this dude is the fucking best NPC of any game. Okay, so, and then you got these other dudes. You got this he can be kind of dry, sarcastic, but like the British guy who's technically the leader of the team. It's not you, it's this other guy. But he's done really well, and he's got his partner, this British girl or lady, woman, man, woman. very, very manly, like super butch, but like really cool character. Just to not a ton of personality, but just it's kind of cool to just not just be like generic, like, oh, it's a lady, it's got to be, she got to be like, you got to be attracted to her, or else it's, you know. I like that they didn't do that. Mm-hmm. And then there's like this, for the representative from China is like super hot. But everyone constantly makes mention of it. Or like, you hold down the button, you can stare at her ass or whatever. And I'm sure some people will be like, oh, that's offensive or whatever. It's the characters. It's not you. It's the, you know, it makes sense because these guys are, you know, you're not supposed to feel good about it or whatever. You can even make comments to the characters about, you know.
About her ass?
About like, or you can say like, you know, that's okay. I don't need to.
I don't need to look at her ass.
Right.
Thanks,
right.
Big Bo.
Right. But the reason I'm talking about the characters so much is they're hilarious and semi compelling for such a ridiculous game. Like, they're just really well, they're fun. But the writing and the voice acting is way better than this game deserves. Like, way, way better. So that kind of kept me going. And then like, suddenly the game is getting these huge set pieces. Do you remember how in Vanquish you'd have those like giant, you know, like the boss fights, mm-hmm. and you're like, holy shit, this game is getting epic. Well, shit, Binary Domain is getting more and more epic as I go through this game. And I'm maybe four or five hours in or something like that. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember exactly how long I was playing, but, it's getting rolling and I'm really impressed. Like, I want to see where it's going next. It's, varying in environments. You're going like through Tokyo and in some of the outside areas there. I mean, you start in the sea and then you get in and you're in the city and stuff. And there's a scene where like this gigantic spider boss thing is, shooting rockets at us and stuff. And you're blowing off parts on it and stuff. And then like it takes down a building.
Oh, damn.
This skyscraper is falling around you and it's insane. Like I like big epic set pieces.
I think that was like, I like second song.
You know, it's the parts I liked in, you know, the God of War games. It's the parts I liked of, like, you know, I like a Vanquish or even the parts of Gears I like the best, you know, with the big.
So what's busted on this? Anything?
Not really. And I'm playing the PC version, which has had a couple of patches. Mm-hmm. Apparently before the patches, you couldn't control it for shit. And there was a bunch of weird things. Right. But apparently you just plug in an Xbox controller and you don't have any of those problems right from the get-go. But I'm using a mouse and it's totally fine. It's just like, I think some people would see it, would start playing it, and they would look at it and go, ah, it's a Sega, you know. So it's a Sega, you know, it's got that kind of janky Japanese story stuff. It's cheesy, you know, whatever. And people might just kind of go, meh. The opening level's not awesome. Mm. It's really not very well done, and you don't have time to kind of fall in love with Big Bo or you don't get a sense of who your character is. And then just, you know, stick through that first section, because after that, it's just starts to get a little better. And, I just like this game. It's That's fun cool. as hell.
That's cool.
It's fun. And especially for fucking $5. I'm like, what the hell? That's good. That's value. That's just good value. Yeah, it has multiplayer.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, I've looked at the game. I just never pulled the trigger on it.
Yeah.
Sounds like I should probably consider it.
Yeah, especially for like a discount. Like, just for the story, if nothing else. But it does have a competitive multiplayer mode, and then it's got a horde mode.
Sure.
You know, like everything does now. Sure. Having fun.
That's crazy.
Just fun as shit.
What is this ability you've developed to weed through generic shooters and find something worth playing in them? Like, I have a feeling that you would have found Vanquish for me if it hadn't been thrown in my face.
Yeah.
Prolonged exposure to Ethan. Yeah.
Well, no, he has the ability to enjoy bad games. I just know how to pick games I know I'm going to like. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
It just, I think I've my tastes have refined or narrowed almost in a way, and I kind of know what I'm going to enjoy, and just filtering out like all that other stuff. And it's like, eh, I know I'm probably not going to like that. Or when I hear somebody say something about a game, and I can hear their negatives and go, this might not be negatives for me. And I hear their positives and I go, oh, I would really enjoy those things. And, you know, I take the aggregate and then I make that decision and
it's a math equation.
And it says $5 and I click purchase. But I would have paid $30 for this game.
Sounds like a perfect $30 game.
Yeah, yeah. So anything less than that, and it's a steal. And if you don't like it, again, don't blame me because you don't like fun. Not my fault.
Or Big Bo.
Yeah, goddamn Big Bo. Just if nothing else, go YouTube search Big Bo and just look at Big Bo being just big and Bo. He's so good. He's kind of like offensive at times, but he's also just like he'll be super jovial. You know, like he'll go from like Suge Knight to like Carl Winslow. I'm like, how the hell do you
Suge Winslow?
Suge. Oh shit! That's gonna be our Photoshop image for this post for this podcast, isn't it? Oh man. So sorry, man. I feel like I just kind of went on a
Jeffon
on a tear there. Apologize. I'm very excited.
Like I said, I'm jealous of your game time last week. Regardless, not anything to do with what you specifically played, but
yeah,
you got a lot out of it.
Oh, so, all right. Well, Justin, I'll throw it over to you for some HorribleNight.com site updates.
Sure.
If you don't mind.
I'll make it quick. Gaming Our Asses Off continues, and in an interesting twist, we have a new contender as our own Coop man, Andrew Cooper, actually started gaming his own ass off about 2 weeks after Justin Gifford and I started. So this is our charity competition. Where Justin and I challenged each other to lose 25 pounds and gain 2,500 gamer score with donations going directly to Child's Play. And, you know, it was kind of nice. We inspired Coop to give it a shot himself. And turns out he's going to start kind of giving us a run for our money because he's right behind us in the weight loss and gamer points. So, you know, he's not directly raising money for it, but I wanted to give him a shout out for pushing us and for participating. He's been doing a good job. So,
how close are you guys to your goals?
I have kind of leveled off with my weight, and Justin's been struggling with his weight loss just because I think I had a much shittier diet at the beginning of this than he did. So the weight, we're both over halfway on weight loss, and then I'm coming up on the gamer score. I should cross the gamer score here in the next week or so, and then he's a couple hundred points behind me there, but it's going to come down to the weight. So,
yeah, okay.
And then Coop's right behind.
Kind of could have told you that, though.
Yeah, I mean, I knew
25 pounds, that's a lot of pounds to lose.
So
I'm surprised you guys didn't put on 2,500 pounds and lose 25 gamer score, honestly. But that's just...
That would have made the news for all the wrong reasons. So, yeah, if you want to help support us or support Child's Play, go to horriblenight.com/gamingourassesoff, and you can donate in Justin and I's name. And we'd appreciate it. And tell your friends, because we're going to keep this going further until we both hit our goals. And it's been fun. It's been.
And by the time that happens, you may have robots that look like people, and you could just get a sub.
They'll probably weigh more, though. All the metal and stuff.
Yeah, unless they do like ceramics and plastics and stuff, you know? Depends.
I might do that as a self-defense mechanism so you can kill the robot and not me.
That's Nick Fury. That's how he survived in the comic books for years, years and years.
And then beyond that, we are in the beginning stages of planning our 24-hour or more charity gaming marathon. That'll be coming your way in October.
Dun, dun, dun.
But we are going to start promoting that here coming in September. Lots of live streaming, lots of video games, lots of good causes. So
Team Hardcore.
Yeah, Matt, Cole beat me to it. Team Hardcore, we're gonna beat that. Yeah,
I'm gonna be there.
he's not gonna participate.
So you'll actually beat Gears a lot faster. I'll be there.
For support or you're playing?
He'll play.
Oh, I'll play.
Oh, okay, okay. I'll be there. I won't play, but I'm gonna.
He was over your shoulder. You should have done it differently.
Damn it,
man! That'd be really, really awesome to have that type of encouragement about 20 hours in to the night.
Oh, jeez, I could have used anything at that point. Just like the ghost of Mickey appearing, you know, would help.
Still, the best part was I was watching about, what, 5 a.m.? You guys were playing. I went to bed, got up at, like, 8:30. You guys were still playing.
Like, the same
after
way.
You've been playing for, like, 5 hours.
Oh, yeah, stop talking about it. I'm getting tired. It's making me tired thinking about, oh, no, I can't. I'm not going to make anything.
That's all I got.
That's pretty exciting stuff, though. That charity marathon, I'm predicting right now, we're going to raise over $15,000.
All right. Hold you to it, Josh.
This Johnny Cage tattoo?
Josh will fill in the gap.
And what's that?
I said Johnny Cage tattoo.
If we raise, oh,
that's him, not me. That's Justin.
If we raise $15,000, to get Johnny tattooed across my chest.
Yep, yep. And I will pay for it.
$15,001.
It sounds kind of impressive. And you were like, wait, that's you get a tattoo on your chest. Like,
this is Johnny.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to explain that to my girlfriend.
Yeah. She'll understand.
Hope she likes Johnny. Get
it. She'll think it's stupid, but she'll understand why you did it. She'll like, well, no, I know you. I know why you did it because you're an idiot.
Yeah.
It's not. It's still dumb.
It's okay. It was for a good cause.
All right. So, all right, guys. Let's end the show on a weird note, I'm guessing, from looking at our these notes here with our threesomes of the week. I don't know what some of these things are. I don't know if I want it. We're about to find out. Justin.
Oh, gosh.
What the hell's a Mondo sex head?
Hey, that's my third one. You'll have to chew on that for a little bit. Chew on the Mondo sex head while I tell you about...
I'm not chewing on any kind of head.
I made my own Shark Week because what? Apparently... So I watched two, Netflix has all the Shark Week seasons or a lot of them on there. So I've been picking through the Netflix lineup.
Wait, how's that work? A Shark Week season? Because it's just a bunch of shows. They just compile the shark related stuff. It's not like
it's like 7 or 8 episodes per season, whatever they do. Like
so it's all their different shows.
Yeah. It's got like, they vary from like the 45 minute, like typical, like Animal Discovery Channel type of things to documentaries on events that have happened, so or shark attacks,
to
or
do all that. Seems kind of weird that unless it's not, I figured it's not all their own stuff. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't even know how it compares to what they actually show on TV. But there are two documentaries in this piece that I watched. The first one I watched twice, called Ocean of Fear, and that is the story of the worst shark attack in history, as far as
USS Indianapolis.
Thinking of the USS Indianapolis and that whole story. That thing is, like I said, I had to watch it twice because it's kind of overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know,
have you seen the memorial?
No, I want to go down to there now.
Yeah, it's downtown. Yeah, like, we're in. If you're listening from somewhere else, we're in Indianapolis. Most of us here.
And it's kind of embarrassing. I didn't even know that story, even though it gets alluded to in Jaws.
Not alluded to. It's a story. Quint tells a story of like his character was there and survived as a survivor, and it's. Like, that's probably most people's, exposure to that story. But he was telling that was the shit. That was like how it went down.
Ship goes down fast. They get thrown in the sea. And
for how many days?
Almost 5 days.
Yeah.
And the sharks are picking off the weak ones all 5 days. And
what did they drink?
That was the thing is a lot of the deaths were, a lot of the shark attacks were actually, they were eating the dead bodies or the sick and injured. And by like day three, the guys, I mean, it's still really hot in the middle of the, you know, Pacific Ocean. And anybody that would drink the salt water, that would give in and drink the salt water, like they would be dead in 4 or 5 hours. And they would go kind of crazy leading up to it. And so they're just telling all those stories because
But they didn't have like canteens with water and stuff.
No, right? It just depending on what raft they found, if they found a raft.
And oh.
So there was some.
Anyone try to water world it?
No, they didn't. I don't think so.
They didn't have the technology.
So, well, you know, hey man, I just, you know, maybe just drink straight from the bottle, you know?
So
I guess so.
Richard Dreyfuss narrates it. Really deep, interesting story. So, then that led me to, hey, they have a documentary on the shark attacks that inspired Jaws. So watched all those.
No shit.
The basically summer back in 1916, and a rogue shark that was either they don't know if it was a great white or a bull shark at this point, but killed a couple people over the course of a couple weeks in the summer of July 1916 on the beach and then rolled up into an actual, like, estuary. Like, the fact that they actually got into a creek was, that's how it ended. It killed, like, three people in a creek. And I had no idea that was even based on anything other than, hey, great whites are scary and sometimes they might get up near our beaches in New York. So that was those were really cool documentaries that I found searching through all of those Shark Week episodes. So I feel like that stuff.
It's pretty awesome. You didn't watch Jaws, though?
No, maybe. I need to watch Jaws. I so probably good. Will
it,
in the
it
next
holds
month.
Up. It's I have Blu-ray. So good.
Blu-ray just came out.
Yeah. And it's on HBO or HBO Go if you've got that.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
Jaws scared the shit out of me.
Still, yeah, I mean, I kind of watch these out of, like, I'm not scared of the water, but I can psych myself out, you know, when I get out there in the ocean.
They made a Jaws game. It's on. You can get it on 3DS.
Really?
Yeah. It's like Jaws Ultimate something. I don't know. You play as Jaws, though. So, I'm sure it's stupid. I'm sure.
And then, music-wise, Mondo Sexhead is the new Rob Zombie remix album.
Oh. Of course it is.
The CD has, like, an explicit image of his, I'm guessing it's Sherry Moon. I'm guessing it's his wife.
Yeah.
But the Spotify album, it just has, it's a up close photo of, like, a kitten with, like, red eyes. And it, just because the album was called Mondo Sexhead, just, it cracked me up. Anyway.
Sure, it wasn't just like a really close up picture of Sherry Moon?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was, and, so he always does remix albums of whatever he's recently released. And I'm a huge zombie fan. Rob zombie fan, white zombie fan, and a zombie fan. But the other thing that stood out was the first song was remixed by some DJ named J Devil.
No way.
Spelled with an I, spelled devil correctly.
So it's a little bit different. Yeah.
And oh my, like the, I went to the website, the dude just looks like a tool. And like he's got like black,
like eyeliner?
Black contacts, black teeth.
Oh.
Like, and then I do some more digging. Uh-oh. And apparently this is like the DJ alternate personality of Jonathan Davis of Korn.
That sounds about right.
Oh, no. So have you changed your Twitter handle yet, sir?
Not yet.
And you're going to, right?
I thought I had the market cornered.
You
on
just
J
changed
Devil.
It to J Korn. Okay.
So that was a fun little rabbit hole that day that I found that album.
That's awful. I apologize.
Yeah. And yeah, his he does not need to do remixes.
For he's the got world he's got shitting on you.
He hung out with Skrillex and he's trying to do dub stuff. And
but you can't. He's got the name now.
Yeah,
you have
he
to
does.
Change it.
Like I.
That's by I've default.
Lost.
He,
I've lost.
Yes, yeah.
I have lost.
Yeah, you can't challenge him for that. All right, the search for new new handle is on. Anyone? Any takers?
I think we need to start a poll.
Okay. Poll.
Poll.com. We'll do it.
Gizmondo, still up there.
Gizmondo? What did you say? Gizmondo.
What's your PS3? What's your PS3 handle?
Oh, Jesus. Come on.
What is it?
Gimonzo.
Gimonzo.
Not Gizmondo.
I misplaced the Z.
Wow.
It's not a failed handheld or a tech blog.
Well, yeah, but you turn it into like a...
Or, yeah, something...
Something else. Some other kind of device.
Some sex failed move. Sex move.
Oh, man. Cole, you wanna go next here?
Sure.
Can you follow that up?
Absolutely. I watched Matt Hoffman, The Birth of Big Air, on Netflix the other day, Sunday night. It's part of the 30 for 30 series that ESPN did, and all of those documentaries are on Netflix now, so... Winning Time, Sweet. The Reggie Miller story for all those Pacer fans, which is a great documentary.
And the Dream Team one.
Oh, they have a Dream Team one?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Are you? Was that 30 for 30 or was that an NBA TV one?
Oh, no.
He doesn't
I don't
know.
Think it's on there.
Oh, no. Oh, I'm wrong. Shit. I think I'm wrong.
I was laughing and hoping this is actually the behind-the-scenes story of the development of BMX XXX when I saw Matt Hoffman's
God
name.
God damn it.
No, it has nothing to do with that.
Or BMX Bandits.
So it's basically kind of telling the story of Matt Hoffman and how he became the big ass biker that he is, BMXer biker, and then how he developed this 20-foot ramp so he could go 20 feet in the air
to the moon,
and yeah, and the injuries that he sustained while doing that, and then how it progressed to today's.
Someone should have told him you will go farther than 20 feet.
Yeah,
just because it's a 20-foot ramp doesn't mean you stop at the top.
Right, and then how it progresses to the ESPN X Games and their big air competition now. So it's pretty cool. It's like less than an hour, but it's really interesting. He seems like a pretty well-adjusted dude. So besides him being an extreme sport kind of guy.
Last 30 for 30 thing I watched was the Scott Hall one, I think, then.
Oh, yeah.
Which is wrestler? a little bit different.
I didn't see that one on there.
Oh, here. That's not it? Wasn't that
That's a That's a ESPN 60 doc.
God damn it. I haven't seen any of these.
The 30 for 30, it was the series, like...
No, I know what it was. A
couple years ago.
Yeah, I know. I just thought this was... one. God damn it.
No, I think that was just a small
whatever
news piece on ESPN 60. But there's a bunch of... obviously, there's 30 movies, and they're usually pretty good. And they kind of take a different look about sports that weren't really covered at the time. And then they're actually doing it again this year.
Oh, cool. More
30 more.
Documentaries.
More.
That's neat.
Oh, boy.
You're right.
Yeah, I'm there. Stupid Google Hangout. Then we had the weekend barbecue and the goodbye drinks for Ethan. Barbecue was at Mr. Lacey's house, and it was fun. Got together with the Horrible Night crew and actually everybody here, and then Coop, and that's it, right? And Ethan, obviously, and the Wags.
Yep.
And Kylie, first introduction to Kylie to some of them.
Does. You know, Josh wasn't full of shit.
Yeah. I know my wife really enjoyed Kylie, so that was cool.
Oh, how much did she enjoy?
They were all relieved that she was normal.
Yeah, especially after all the stories we told about you. Yeah. So we had good food, good time. Then we went to the Rathskeller in Indianapolis and got shitty. And continued our journey into different bars when that one closed, and ended up playing Cards Against Humanity in a bar.
It's awesome.
Which was awesome.
Did you end up in that? Was it the gay bar?
No, we ended up at Mass Ave Pub.
And oh, okay. You went back to
the dive bar of that area. And but yeah, the music was playing loud, and there were some loud people, and we were playing. There's like eight of us playing Cards Against Humanity. Yeah, and so we were basically having to yell across the table.
What's the worst card you had to yell?
All of them.
I don't remember. I was so
drunk. I was having so much fun with it that.
Did anyone get offended?
No, but there's all good sports there. I mean, the ones that I love playing that game with people. A few people that have played it and a few people that haven't, and just getting the reactions of.
No, I mean like other people in the bar.
No one. Like we were yelling some like pretty dastardly shit around the waiter, and he didn't even flinch. And I'm like, come on, like. Yeah, we did one of those pick twos, and I had the combination of, I'll let you fill in the gap. So it was a combination of pedophiles and the little engine that could.
Oh no! Oh no! And, oh no!
It's rare to get the good pick two combos. But,
that game got a new expansion coming soon.
Yeah, track that shit down. CardsAgainstHumanity.com, I believe.
Yeah, and if it's not in stock, you just put your email in there, and they'll send you an email as soon as it goes up on Amazon. It's
a ton of fun if you have people, friends with sense of humor.
That was a fun evening, though. It was fun, a little fun send-off.
And then my third one is the Last Story soundtrack. I actually pre-ordered the game on Amazon and got the soundtrack and an art book with it, which it didn't cost any more. It was just a pre-order bonus because I don't pay more for special editions. And I've been listening to it a lot, and it's only 7 songs. It's a premium soundtrack. I think they released a 3-disc one in Japan. But the music is really good. Like I said earlier, it's Nobuo Uematsu who did all the...
Yeah, I heard he's good.
He did all the major good music from Final Fantasy, so it's really good. There's one song on there that I can't get out of my head, and it's not a bad thing. So I recommend you guys check it out.
Can you sing it for us now?
Not that you put me on the spot. I could probably whistle it. Go ahead. I wasn't thinking about
it. Go ahead.
We'll wait.
Brandon, how about your threesomes?
Well, I watched Transformers Dark of the Moon finally, and I just wish Michael Bay would stop screwing up shit.
I was going to say, you don't sound as excited as Josh did about the video game.
No. The video game was much better. You know what? I liked the first one all right, but then every successive one, I just more and more hated it. I didn't even go see this one in theaters. I waited till it came on Netflix.
So this is worse than two?
I actually took multiple sittings to get through it because I just was not that interested.
That's so sad. It's fucking giant robots fighting. And
I know, but they do so much stupid shit in there that, it, you know, it doesn't do, humans. You know, Josh's example of, this is your childhood, and this is action, and cram it together. It's just, this is Michael Bay, this is a cucumber, and this is your ass.
I just picture Michael Bay with, like, his cucumber strap on.
Oh, God.
It'd probably have, like, M80s, like, lit M80s jammed in the end of it, too.
It's just, I don't know. I really did not enjoy it. They just tried to get, I don't know, he tried to make it too dark, I think, and just really lost sight on what it was supposed to be.
Man, yeah. God damn. But if they just had removed all the human parts.
Yeah, I was going to say, I enjoyed the first one.
Yeah.
Didn't see the second one. So, I mean, is the third one noticeably worse than the second one?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. It's all more of the same.
Sure.
Like, they don't do anything new. I don't feel like it's like the same shit. It's like I watching that movie, I just kept going like, this is it? Like, I thought they were going to do something. Like, if they had brought out Unicron, I'd have been like, okay.
Is that the world eating?
Yeah. He's like the Galactus of Transformers. Like, that would have been pretty cool. Or like, had the Stan Bush been the main character? Or if, I don't know. I guess if the movie had been just a completely different movie altogether.
Yeah. They just taken the High Moon games and made that a movie.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Yeah, but there's no people in it. So they'd be like, well, you know, because people are cheaper than CG, I guess. Some of them are, at least.
Yeah, it's just
budget.
Overly disappointing.
A lot of budget shit.
Boo.
I have also been, for some reason, really into preseason football this year. I think I'm just ready for it.
You know, those games don't matter.
I will sit there and watch an entire preseason game. I've never done that before.
It does.
So yeah. I really want.
You're a crazy person.
Football to be back. I am crazy. So, I'm excited about it.
I've done that for the first preseason game, like the first one back for everybody. Like, I've watched that entire thing just
because just like there's football on TV, and you're like, holy shit, there's football on TV.
But have you been watching like subsequent weeks?
And then you put the scrubs in, and you're like,
Yeah.
All right.
I have. I actually just watched the entire Panthers Jets game, and that was the most exciting game of two offenses trying not to score. Tim Tebow is just horrible. But I don't know. I've just been really excited for football, so much so that I've decided to give Madden NFL 13 a chance.
I saw that.
My theme this year
Aaron posted a pretty hilarious animated GIF from Madden, just, I guess, encapsulating the new animation system. So they built redid the physics in the Infinity Engine, and it just says the system just does not know the difference between just, like, a nudge or a small trip, like everything is like overblown. And he posted this image of basically the quarterback was just kind of kneeling down after the play, and there was a defensive guy like celebrating like behind him and kind of like walked backwards into him, like did this big dramatic flip.
Wait a minute, now I'm getting, you're getting, okay, hang on, this sounds kind of cool.
And I like collision systems like that, so I might get sucked in.
It's pretty prominent. They'll be like walking to the huddle and bump into somebody.
Well, this sounds great. I love broken games. Is it broken or is it just like a very rare occurrence?
I think it's more in the idle stuff, it sounds like.
It's more in the idle stuff. It doesn't happen every play. It's just every now and then you'll notice something that's just definitely, because
I'm on board with that. Like, if the game was just, everything was ridiculous and over the top, everyone just ragdolled all over the field. Like, well, remember that, like the electric football field things we're talking about on Saturday?
Even if your character's laying, or football player's laying on the ground and there's someone standing over him, he doesn't get up right away, so he just stays there on the ground until the guy moves. And at one point, I was watching a stream and a football player was sitting on another football player, and they stayed like that the entire cutscene in between. So it just looks fun. So
was it a tea bag?
It was a pretty long tea bag.
Well, God makes us all different.
Might be a Michael Bay tea bag. I don't know. And then finally, and then finally, my son has graduated from daycare and went into kindergarten, and that's been an experience that I was not really prepared for. And so it's been one thing to always have him around and, you know, playing games and daycare and all that stuff. Now he's actually going to school, and now I feel older than I really wanted to feel.
Happened overnight. You're now
older. It literally did. And the funny story about it was when we dropped him off on the first day and we were all in the gym, and he was a little nervous. My wife's a little nervous. She's trying not to cry. I'm nervous.
You're trying not to cry.
And I told him, I said, "Look, bud, just have a good day and make new friends." And he, without hesitation, he turned around, looked right at this kid who had a Mario shirt, and goes, "Hey, I like your shirt. What's your name?" And then just walked off.
That's awesome. That had to make you feel good.
Like, yeah, so I was like, okay, he's probably not going to have that bad of a time here. Cool. So,
it's a meme.
That was just really cool, but it was funny. He just singled out the one kid wearing a Mario shirt.
Hey.
And went right for him.
Go with your comfort zone.
That's right.
You should have given him some cigarettes to make friends with. Like to hand out to other kids.
I had a couple of friends suggest, you know, Drakkar Noir. Just bring that in. It's maybe not a hit with the ladies, he said.
It's not 1990 anymore, though. That's the first. Oh, cool.
That's it.
Cool. So, yeah, mine seem real tame now. Oh, no. So I rode on a space shuttle this past weekend. And then,
what else did you do?
Let's see. I ate a stick of dynamite. Let's see. What else did I do? None of these things happened. I can't lie to you guys.
She just pulled an Ethan.
That was an Ethan. I watched Lockout.
I don't know what Lockout is.
Isn't this fantastic movie? What's his name? Guy Pierce.
Okay.
He's a buff, wisecracking 80s action star in a 2012 movie. He's like a badass kind of army dude, loose cannon type, and there's a space prison, and the president's daughter is stuck on it, and the prisoners like riot, and so they send a guy to the station to infiltrate and retrieve her and kill the bad guys along the way. And it is, I mean, I can't believe this wasn't just made in the 80s.
Like, why was it made now?
Because why not? It's fun.
Watertight.
I can't remember who directed it. Was it like a Luc Besson film or something like that? Like somebody that does.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. It was fun. It was fun as shit. Again, this is my theme recently. I only deal with fun shit. If it's too deep, if it's going to get me down, I don't want it. I want pure entertainment. It's rent it, red box it or whatever. It's really fun.
Huh.
It was just good action. It was hilarious. Like he was funny as shit. But man, he does a good, like, action hero guy.
Your description took a turn here, and I don't know when that happened. Like, I thought you were going on, this is a really waste of my time. No,
it was fucking great. Again, this is another one of those things. Like, if you don't like fun stuff, if you're like, you know what, I need like the thinking man's, but wait, don't watch this then, because you won't like it, because it's fun. Also, the Next Generation Blu-rays.
I've heard things.
I got to watch a few of these. And I got to say, first of all, it looks so good compared to the DVDs or any of the.
They rebuilt them basically.
Yeah. Because even the best quality like DVD was just like a shitty scan of the film. And so they went back and they did a lot, like they did a lot of work on these things and it looks really sharp. It's not widescreen, which I was kind of like, oh, I thought this was going to be.
Do you know why?
Yeah, I think it has something to do with like the way they
shot it.
They shot it. There were people on like the sides of the.
So they did that.
Like it's there. Like the film is when they film it, it's widescreen.
But the people like holding the boom mics. Yeah, standing right there.
Right. Okay. Or like wooden walls and stuff.
I kind of want to watch that version.
Yeah, but like how much can they? There must have been a lot of it if they couldn't like clean that up.
Yeah,
because they already did so much work on the rest of it. Anyways, first season of Star Trek Next Generation is bad. It's not good.
When's it pick up?
Season 3. So it's like
except when Riker gets a beard.
Yeah.
Yes. that is exactly the moment. He comes on the screen with the beard and suddenly like it's
what's up number one?
Yeah, it's like worth watching. You're like, "Wait, this show just got badass." But yeah, like Tasha Yar sucks. Worf's forehead sucks. Like the fucking uniforms are awful. They're in pajamas.
Oh, they also get collars too, I think.
Yeah, yeah. They have weird, like, these little weird lapel things, and it's, those uniforms are just dumb. Yeah, some of the stories were really weird too, but, it picks up, like, a lot as, and once season three hits. Season one's got, it's got a couple of okay ones, but the one I watched, was, and I completely forgot about this episode. I think I probably maybe saw it, like, you know, 15 years ago or something, but these aliens have basically infiltrated the like people in Starfleet, and they have these like little things that crawl under your ear. It happened in like the Wrath, I think in like the Wrath of Khan, they had little things that crawled in people's ears. It's kind of like playing on that. And these are the kind of same way. They crawl in your ear and then they mind control you. But these aren't just like power of suggestion things that other humanoids use. These are a race of like these weird little alien bug things. And so Picard's and Riker kind of have to like figure out who's really human from this Starfleet command group. And that part is actually kind of cool. But when it gets to the end and they confront the guy who's like, he's the, all the aliens kind of put together, they like crawl together. They're like all inside of his stomach, but he looks like a human. And they just blast him with phasers, like to kill him. And they just, they blast him so much and his head like explodes and his like chest explodes open. And the camera sits there for a second and you see like the goriest scene on television, like maybe ever. And it's in fucking Star Trek. Like what in the hell? I just couldn't believe this. And it was like, man, maybe because it was in like shitty standard definition and it was like had Vaseline rubbed on the lens. The first time I saw this, I just didn't really notice, but man, in high def, shit was gross. might be worth it just to get that episode. Hopefully these new versions will end up on like Netflix or something at some point. And I wanted to mention too, Level 7. So this was a game, if you listen to any of our Gen Con coverage, this is a game that we played at Gen Con and enjoyed. This is a board game by Privateer Press, who normally does like miniatures, like war games. And it's like a sci-fi survival horror cooperative board game. And Justin and I and Ethan and a couple friends of ours, Travis and Zach, we've all played it like a few different times in different places. But the last little get-together we had playing this game was like kind of the first time where we played and kind of knew all the rules and really got to sit down and play a few full games of it. And this is... That game is fun.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Very, like, when we say survival horror, it's like everything's trying to kill you and it's kind of easy to die. Mm-hmm. It's easy to kind of get screwed.
Your character's kind of worthless because all they're doing is running away.
Yeah. Like, you can fight stuff, but you don't really want to. So it's better just to try to run away from everything. And it's, you can lose. This isn't like a game where you can, you know, where it's like, well, somebody's got to win. And like, it's cooperative, but like, everyone can lose. You can literally like all die or run out of time.
There is no reason we should have survived the second scenario.
No. We had some lucky things happen in our last game.
I sacrificed myself unknowingly.
Yeah.
But, after I was taken out of the game, I want to feel like I added a lot more to it. At that point, I proceeded to get on my iPad and start browsing every tense sci-fi music theme that I could find.
Justin was DJing.
Yeah. So if you would like me to come DJ your tabletop games, I can do that.
Really enhances the atmosphere. Offering. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really... Super Troopers worked.
Highly right.
What's your hourly rate?
I'm still working on that math. Okay. Depends on the game.
He works for Spacebucks.
But no, seriously, this was my first ever tabletop gaming experience. I mean, aside from, little stuff growing up, but...
That might have been my favorite part of it, was seeing you and Ethan just jump both feet into, this game, be almost like being your first foray, really, into this world... And having so much fun and just getting into the mechanics of it and the theme and all that stuff without a pause.
It was the thing I would say to newcomers, this is never underestimate how social this experience actually is. Because, this is kind of a co-op game, but we also could have screwed each other over. Just working through that experience with other gamers, that's where the fun really draws. Sure. Comes into play. We could have played next to anything, but this is a great game to jump into because it's getting ready to come out, I think, at the end of the year. Like, they sold it at Gen Con.
Right.
But this is a new franchise for them that they're just starting, and I think it's pretty accessible for video gamers. So if you like aliens and sci-fi and kind of dungeon crawly video games, I would recommend giving it a shot. And we'll probably promote it a little bit here in the near future as well.
Yeah, pretty cool. Ethan got so into it. He did this little write up. It's not up on the site, but I was so impressed by his recollection of the mechanics of the game, the detail he went into. Like, it was obvious that video games, there's not much downtime, and no one reads an instruction manual. Where with like a lot of board games, like you and I'm not talking about Monopoly and Life, but these kind of like heavier themed games, and this is like. You have to read the book, otherwise you won't know how to play. But then there's also some downtime between turns. It's not like it was boring because you still stuff to, watch and pay attention to when other people are going. But the social aspect of it is completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can sit there and have a drink and shoot the shit and stuff or whatever. But it's more like you just have plenty of time to just react to everything that's happening. So like everyone kind of has their little time in the spotlight as the turns go around a table. So whatever you're doing, everyone's watching it. So when you do something cool, everyone cheers for you. When you do something stupid, everyone likes to point it out. And but at least the way that spotlight kind of goes around, I think is a fun, unique thing that really only happens in tabletop gaming.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite aspects of playing Dungeons and Dragons growing up, and then Vampire the Masquerade in around my college years. Mm-hmm. Is that aspect of it. We would always be laughing at the stupid shit we were doing in the game or situations. And my brother usually would lead those games, and he would hold you to what you said quite literally sometimes, sometimes a very negative way. And they sometimes would create some really hilarious situations. So, I mean, I absolutely agree. It's one of my favorite memories of playing tabletop games. I just don't have anybody to play with anymore.
Oh, no. You just need to move closer to us.
Yeah, no.
We play every week.
That's the only reason.
That's it. That's the only one.
Tabletop games, honey. We're moving.
All right. I think that'll do it, guys. Thanks thanks for joining us here. This is most fun I have all week long, pretty much. Dude, why did you look at me like that?
I think you're pimping your own show.
I really do. I really do enjoy this, doing this.
It's my second theme, my right? second Finish favorite it. Thing to do.
There you go. Yeah. Horrible show every other week when Super Game of Best Friends is not on the air.
Yeah.
You can check that out. Also, if you enjoy this, go to horriblenight.com. Check out all the other stuff we do. These guys on the show with me do a bunch of writing. If you like to read. There's pictures there, too, which is cool. That's my favorite part. And then we also do a lot of video stuff. You can see this on our site or on youtube.com/horriblenighttv.
Or and, live on Twitch.
And we're live on Twitch every Tuesday night. And... for random other stuff too, and we always have those archives up so you can watch any of that stuff afterwards. Again, thanks for joining us, and we will see you guys again in 2 weeks.
Koopa.